A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, in black and white, a shield appears with the letters WB and the inscription Warner Brothers Pictures Incorporated presents. Now, as we move down a mountain creek, titles appear embedded with stars and stripes. Gary Cooper as Alvin C. York in Sergeant York. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Justin Soule and Carrie Danahy, read by Pat Lentz. For more about DBS, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dbs.wgbh.org. With Walter Brennan, Joan Leslie, George Tobias, Stanley Ridges, Margaret Weicherly. Produced by Jesse L. Lasky and Hal B. Wallace. Original screenplay by Abram Finkel and Harry Chandley and Howard Koch and John Huston. Based upon the diary of Sergeant York as edited by Tom Scahill. Director of Photography Saul Pulido, ASC. Battle sequences photographed by Arthur Edison, ASC. Film editor William Holmes. Sound by Oliver S. Gerritsen. Musical director Leo F. Forbstein. Copyright 1941. Music by Max Steiner, directed by Howard Hawks. Now words appear over still waters. We are proud to present this picture and are grateful to the many heroic figures still living who have generously consented to be portrayed in its story. To their faith and ours that a day will come when man will live in peace on earth, this picture is humbly dedicated. Now more words appear over a herd of cattle in a stream. High in the heart of the Cumberland Mountains in Tennessee lies the Valley of the Three Forks of the Wolf, and here in the spring of the year 1916. Now, townspeople ride horses and wagons down a dirt road to a wooden church. Inside, a pastor conducts the standing congregation from his pulpit. The drably dressed congregation sits as the white-haired pastor looks down at his pulpit through a pair of glasses.
And he spake this parable unto them, saying, what man are you having 100 sheep? If you lose one of them, doth not leave the 99? And
a white-bearded man arrives at the back of the church, holding his hat in front of him.
Doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which he lost until...
The pastor looks up at the newcomer, who creeps down the aisle in his squeaky shoes. The man stops.
Until he find it. And when he hath found it, he layeth it on his shoulder and rejoiceth. And when he cometh...
The bearded man stops in his tracks again.
All right, Zeke, sit yourself down. And when he cometh home, he calleth together his friends and neighbors, saying...
As Zeke sits, he steps on another man's foot.
He calleth to his friends and neighbors, saying unto them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which were lost.
The pastor looks up from under his dark, bushy eyebrows.
I recollect the time Sam Harkness lost his old sow. He come out one morning, the pen be busted down, the sow was gone. Sam lit out after her to find it. He had 6 or 7 other pigs that didn't run off. But did Sam get down on his marrow bones and thank the good Lord for that? No, siree, not Sam. He hunted high and low for that old...
Outside, 3 men ride down the dirt road on horseback. In the church, the congregation looks back to the pastor.
As I was saying, he hunted high and low for that old sow. About all he...
Seated in one pew, a teenage girl with dark pigtails and a woman with beady, deep-set eyes turn toward a window. Outside, the 3 men ride around a tree, waving their pistols in the air. One of them stops and fires a vertical line of bullet holes into its trunk. Back in the church.
About all he done that summer was hunt for that sow. Wouldn't even stop. Wouldn't even stop hunting when winter come. And sure enough, one night when he's plowing home through the snow, he seen something move in the shadows. Sam's right scared. Figures maybe it's a bar. Then, Well, Sam was fitting to be tied. The rejoicedest man you ever seen. 10 times as rejoiceful for the lost one as for them that stayed in the fold. Now this here is the pint.
The pastor lowers his gesturing arm. Outside, the three men ride back down the road past the church. Inside, the pastor steps beside his pulpit.
Appears to me the devil be a knocking at the door of a house of worship. If there's any of you want to go get him, you be free to go. Because the meeting's over.
The people get up. Outside, several churchgoers gather by the shot-up tree. The pastor walks by.
Looky here, Pastor Pyle. Alvin York done shot his initials in this tree, A-Y, plain as D.
It was Alvin York, Ike Bodkin, and Buck Lipscomb in their liquor.
Oh, was you saying it were?
The beady-eyed woman approaches.
Who was you saying it were?
It were Alvin, Miss York.
I'll be your knowing.
The man points to the tree. Spelled out in bullet holes are the initials A-Y.
Torn to Alvin, Mother York. It were the liquor.
Mighty good shooting for a man in his liquor. Ain't it?
As she walks off, the pigtailed girl and a boy in a hat follow. Elsewhere, the three shooters ride along a grassy trail. Now, an unshaven man rides a mule down a fenced road.
I'm a Nero Chero. Rattle, ladda, ladda, bobble, ladda, bobble, ling, dum, ring, dum, body, Mitchie Campbell. Took Miss Mousie on his knee.
A leather satchel labeled U.S. Mail hangs on his hip.
Pray, Miss Mousie, won't you marry me? Ring, dum, body, Mitchie Campbell.
Rattle, ladda. The mailman dismounts by a rural two-story building. Its sign reads, Rozier Pyle General Merchandise. The mailman enters.
Howdy, boys.
Hi, Ernie.
Howdy, Pastor.
Howdy, Luke. We're looking for you, Sadney.
Couldn't get here in the morning fly. Roads are getting soggy and soggier between here and Rugby.
That's so.
Water is so deep in some of them creek beds, had to use old Betsy's belly for a boat. Hiya, Zeke.
I reckon you could have got here quicker if you'd have carried Betsy.
Yeah, I wished I could get me another mule like old Flora. They ain't turning out mules like they used to.
No,
at
sir.
At the counter.
What you got there, young fella? The very latest thing in ladies' hats, the close model.
Women folks around here wear split bonnets. Young'uns goes bareheaded.
Maybe so, but in modern merchandising, the storekeeper endeavors to create a demand. Now, in this line of ladies' bloomers, very moderately priced, has the finest elastic in the waistband, also in the knees. No amount of washing will make it lose its snap.
Your first trip in these parts, ain't it?
Yes, and we have them in three lovely colors, which we absolutely guarantee will not fade or shrink. Plenty of room in the seat, too. I can tell you these garments are mighty popular with the ladies.
You can, huh?
Yes.
Well, folks hereabouts wouldn't know what them things is for. Lem?
Yeah.
Lem, here's your Nashville papers.
Thank you, Pastor.
I got letters here for Tom Carver and Ed Watson. Both back tax bills, I reckon.
What does it say, Lem? Well...
Lem opens the paper. The headline reads, German smash at Verdun.
You're telling Cordell Hull are speech-making over at Jimtown. Appears he's out running for Congress again. It says...
I mind when Cord Hall weren't knee-high to a toad frog, running around his shirt there. Just goes to show you what a fella can do if he gets book learning.
That paper's 4 days old. I read it over in Nashville.
Yep, it took Luke 3 days of mule peddling to bring the mail from Rugby.
I can believe that after driving over here from Jamestown.
Jimtown.
The salesman turns to Zeke.
I thought it was Jamestown.
It is.
The salesman faces Lem and the others.
Well, anyway, since driving over here, what I'd like to know is, how do you fellas get into this valley?
We were born here.
The salesman turns to Pastor Pyle at the counter and holds up a pair of bloomers.
Now look, Mr. Pyle, I'd like to sell you some of these garments before the price goes up on account of the war.
What war?
The salesman steps trepidatiously towards Zeke.
Why, the war in Europe.
Oh, that war.
Yes. Certainly. Looks like the Germans might get into Paris, don't you think?
Well, we ain't done much thinking on it, mister. It ain't in our corner nohow.
If you're hankering for trouble, it ain't scarce right here in these mountains.
Oh, I ain't looking for any trouble.
Yep, fighting could have been mighty plentiful down to meeting house last night. Did you hear? Alvin York and two other fellers done busted up the meeting.
That ain't a smithering to what he done in Jimtown. Nigh split the jail, he did.
No.
Raised such a rumpus I had to turn him loose.
Do tell.
Old man Jarvis up Bear Creek way told me he seen the three of them riding their mules hell-bent for election towards the Kentuck border.
They reckon the liquor were getting low and they wanted to get there before they sobered up.
Zeke motions. The men turn to see Mrs. York standing in the doorway holding a wicker basket.
Howdy, Mrs. York.
Howdy, Luke.
Howdy, Mother York.
Tolerable, Pastor.
What can I do for you today?
Could I be getting a can of baking powder and a poke of salt?
Sure thing.
Pastor Pyle leads her across the store. As he fetches the items, Mrs. York sets her basket on another counter.
I ain't having but 5 eggs, and they're kind of puny.
Oh, eggs, I reckon.
He smiles at her.
It was plumb out of salt.
Pastor Pyle transfers her eggs to another basket on the counter.
Don't be taking it hard, Mother York. What you just hear?
I ain't to take nothing hard, Pastor. And I ain't making excuses for Alvin to nobody.
Of course you ain't. I ain't asking you to.
I'm right proud of Alvin.
Got a right to be.
Works hard, Alvin does. Patching and scratching that poor land. It's mighty hard work, getting corn out of rocks.
Indeed it is.
Who's to blame him if it busts loose now and again?
Nobody, Mother York, nary a soul.
Mrs. York looks down.
Of course I ain't for Alvin doing like he does.
She fixes her deep-set eyes on the pastor.
Little religion wouldn't do him no hurt.
No, it wouldn't.
Mrs. York lowers her eyes.
Pastor, I wouldn't be again your talking to him. You reckon it would do any good?
Well, wouldn't do no harm. I'll be riding up and having a talk with him.
She picks up her basket of groceries.
Well, thanking you, Pastor.
She walks off. Now on a fenced path, she hikes up a hill past an enormous round boulder. A dog follows her as she heads to a cabin atop the hill. Inside, her daughter, Rosie, stands at a stove while her younger son stacks firewood.
George. Yes, Mom?
I reckon I know where your brother's at.
She pulls off her bonnet.
He's up the Kentuck border. Go fetch him.
Yes, sir.
George heads to the door and pulls his black hat and coat from a hook. As he checks the stock of a rifle, his mother puts a paper bundle inside his coat pocket.
Better be taking a piece of home for your supper, son.
Yes, sir.
Mrs. York watches George walk out the door with the rifle. Nighttime. A signpost stands in front of a tall cabin. One half reads Tennessee and the other Kentucky. Inside the cabin, Alvin and his two friends stagger through the front door and head over to a saloon bar.
Hi, Marta.
Hi, Alvin.
Marta, who wants to get us a bottle?
Now, look here, Alvin. You know, I know, and so do the sheriff. You're from over here in Tennessee. And I can't sell you no liquor unless you get over yonder and cleaned up.
Marta. You air the legalist fella in these here parts if you ain't nothing else.
You gotta be in this business.
Maybe our credit ain't no good in Tennessee.
Maybe it ain't no better in Kentuck.
They cross a state border line painted on the floor.
You got any corn without no lye in it?
No pies, no cleaves in it either.
Ain't no lye in this liquor.
Alvin's friends hand him coins, which he gives to Martin, the bartender. One of the men picks up the liquor bottle. Alvin stays at the bar as his friends walk off with the liquor. At a nearby table, a woman looks up at Alvin. Her two male companions play cards. Grinning, Alvin leans back against the bar. As the woman smiles at him, one of her companions stares coldly at Alvin and throws his cards down on the table. Alvin calmly removes his jacket and crosses the room back into Tennessee. He sets his jacket on a chair near his friends.
Plumb holler I am, like an old burnt-out stump.
me too.
Alvin throws his leg over the chair and sits.
What are we drinking to, Alvin?
What do we drink to, Ike? Well, I reckon we drunk to putting everything there. Can't think of nothing new.
Me neither.
Reckon we better begin all over?
Hey, if we can't drink to something, why don't we drink again something?
Again something? Again what?
Oh, again something or somebody we're against.
I ain't again nobody or nothing. Kept getting sober.
We'll drink again that. You'll be a-killing two birds with one stone.
Sure. Ain't never gonna get sober.
Alvin swigs from the bottle. Nearby, a rifle barrel pokes through the front door. As the door swings open, George steps inside.
Never gonna get sober.
Ike spots George across the room. The boy kicks the door shut behind him and heads over to his brother's table.
Well, I'll be blowed. What are you doing here, George? Youngins like you ain't got no business in a place like this here, nohow. Now, just you skedaddle.
Mom wants you, Alvin.
Now, look here, George.
Mom wants you.
He points the rifle at Alvin.
Son of God. Well, reckon I better go. I'll be seeing you.
Alvin stands up and follows his brother past the card player's table.
His ma wants him.
Alvin hands his jacket to his brother and strides over to the laughing card player.
Get up.
Hey, quit that.
Alvin decks the card player.
Hold your horses, Mario.
As Ike holds back the bartender, his dark-haired friend joins the scuffle. Alvin knocks an attacker into the player piano. As the brawl intensifies, Ike rubs his hands together. A fist rams into Ike's face, knocking him to the ground. He quickly gets back up.
Here we go again!
As Ike winds up a punch, a stout guy plows into him and knocks him back down.
I'm still a-coming!
Ike charges forward again. The stout guy steps to the side, and Ike crashes into the overturned card table. The stout guy goes to the bar and takes a swig from a bottle. Meanwhile, George watches stone-faced as his brother and another man wrestle on the ground. Looking up, George sees Alvin's dark-haired friend knock a brawler through a door's window panes. At the piano, a man slides a lever from fast to slow. Alvin leaps. His rear end slams down on his fallen opponent's belly, and he repeatedly bangs the man's head into the floor.
Say when you got enough.
Alvin sneers.
Say it.
He continues rapping the man's head against the floor.
Enough.
Alvin stands. Nearby, Ike pummels the stout man. As he throws a punch, his dazed foe flops over, and the punch connects with Alvin.
Mom wants you, Alvin.
Alvin looks up crookedly at his brother.
Mom wants you.
As Alvin slides his legs down from the wall, his face remains on the floor.
Coming, George.
Alvin staggers to his feet and surveys the barroom's overturned tables and toppled customers. George hands him his hat and leads him to the door. Alvin waves at his friends.
I'll be seeing you.
So long, Al.
Later, George leads a horse up a hill in the woods. Astride the horse, Alvin wobbles back and forth, his head hung low. They approach a crude split rail fence. Meanwhile, inside their cabin, Mrs. York pulls a coffee pot from the fireplace and wipes her hand with a rag. George enters through the front door while Alvin waits outside.
Here he is, Ma. Took a heap of looking, but he come easy.
As Mrs. York stares at Alvin, he looks down to avoid her gaze.
Fetch me a pail of water, George.
Yes.
As George walks past Rosie sitting in bed, Mrs. York turns back to her eldest son. With his head bowed, he pulls his jacket snug and removes his hat. Glancing up, he finds his mother's eyes still pinned to him. As Alvin looks back down, George brings a metal pail to his mother. She carries it to the doorway and sloshes water into Alvin's face. Squeezing his eyes shut, Alvin shakes his head. As his mother walks away, Rosie approaches and hands Alvin a towel. The drunkard dries himself off, steps inside, and removes his jacket. Across the room, Mrs. York transfers a skillet from the stove to the table.
Breakfast ready now, dears. Better be getting at it. South Field needs a plowing.
Alvin sets the towel on a hook and joins his family at the table. Everyone holds their palms together and bows their heads.
The Lord bless these victuals we done got. and help us to be beholden to no man. Amen.
As they begin serving themselves, Mrs. York holds out a sack of salt to Alvin.
I reckon you'll want some salt on your pone.
He takes the sack from his smiling mother and opens it. Daytime. At the top of a rocky hill, Pastor Pyle rides a horse across a log bridge and passes through a gap in a fence.
Oh, Fred.
His horse stops. Another horse emerges over a hill in front of him, dragging a plow. Alvin stands behind, guiding the plow's two wooden handles.
Get up, Noah.
As Alvin's horse pulls the plow through a rough stretch of weed-covered dirt, Pastor Pyle approaches on foot.
Oh.
Alvin tilts back his hat.
Howdy, Pastor.
Hi, Alvin.
I've been kind of expecting you. I'm right sorry about the other night. I reckon I'd done the wrong thing.
See that rock, Alvin? You've been plowing around that rock a heap of years.
Sure have.
Did you ever think when you start plowing your furrows crooked, it's mighty hard to get them straight again?
I never thought on it much.
And it's that away, I reckon. With other things besides plowing. Satan's got you by the shirt tail, Alvin.
Sure has. Head up, Noah.
He's gonna yank you straight down to hell.
You were plumb right, Pastor.
You gotta make him let loose you before it's too late.
I sure wish I knowed how.
Wrestle him, Alvin. Wrestle him like you would a bar.
I done wrestle him, Pastor, but... Oh, whoa there, Noah. Noah. But old Satan, he hangs on tight.
You and the Lord could throw him, Alvin. Why, twixt the two of you, to have old Satan down a jiffy.
Well, I sure wish the Lord would throw in.
He will, if you ask him.
Alvin lifts a rock.
Oh, I done prayed, Pastor, till I was black in the face.
He tosses the rock over the fence.
But it weren't no use.
Ain't only praying, Alvin. It's believing. Now you see here. Take a look at that old oak yonder. Looks mighty strong. It's been standing here since your pa was a boy of plowing in this same field. Looks like it'd go right on standing all by itself, don't it?
Yeah.
Just resting itself and feeding on the earth. Well, it can't. It can't stand there without there's a lot of deep roots are holding it up. You can't see the roots, but they're there just the same. It appears to me it's been planned. A fella's got to have his roots in something outside his own self.
Well, I reckon I ain't found no roots what'll hold me up when I'm hell-bent to fall.
And then take the animals in the woods. Squirrels would go mighty hungry if nothing made them store up nuts for the wintertime.
Sure would.
How do you reckon birds get to fly north in the summer if there ain't something to guide them? A bird ain't got no way of telling north from south. And then there's the bees. Bees would sure be in a fix if they weren't beholden to something to show them how to get back to the hives.
Well, I ain't no bird, and I ain't no squirrel, and I sure ain't no bee.
Well, that's right, Alvin.
The way I figure, there ain't no use for a fella going out looking for religion. It's just got to come to a fella.
It'll come, my boy, you'll see. Maybe slow, like the way daylight comes, and maybe in a flash, like a bolt of lightning.
When?
When you ain't even expecting it.
Well, I hope so.
Alvin takes the plow's handles.
Get up, Noah. I'll be seeing you.
Pastor Pyle stands watching as Alvin pushes forward with the plow. The pastor takes a deep breath, then turns and walks off. Now, a carving in a tree reads, D. Boone killed a bar on the tree in year 1760. The word killed is spelled with a C. Behind it, Alvin and George follow three hounds across a shallow stream. Both carry rifles. As the hounds race across a field, Alvin and George chase after them from far behind.
Mighty fresh, less than an hour old.
Reckon it's a red fox?
Might be red, might be gray.
Making a big circle.
Can't tell about his course if he gets out on a flat.
The hounds tear over a hill past a fence, then weave through a patch of sheaved corn stalks. Next, they pass a flock of chickens in front of a wagon. A young woman watches from a nearby porch and pulls a brush from her thick, dark hair. The hounds leap through another fence and disappear up a hill. As the York brothers chase after them, Alvin sees the woman and stops.
They took to the hill, Lord. Yeah, that away.
With his arm pointing toward the hill, Alvin keeps his eyes locked on the young woman. She turns away demurely and continues brushing her hair. Alvin steps toward her.
What's the matter, Alvin?
The young woman glances back at them over her shoulder. Alvin doffs his hat to her.
Howdy.
You're Alvin York, ain't you?
Yes.
Let's get going, Alvin.
The young woman coyly glances away.
I ain't seen you in a coon's age. Why you been keeping yourself?
Yeah, Bobs.
What's ailing you? Are you coming or ain't you?
Yeah, you better go get that fox, George.
You're just taged.
George walks off.
How's your ma?
Alvin leans against the porch rail, grinning.
I asked you how your ma was.
Tolerable.
I figured it was you out of hunt. No mistaking the voices of them hand dogs. One's a having a hook to the end of its bay you could be hanging a bucket on. T'other's a croak. Just like a frog. About moonrise.
You ain't Gracie Williams, are you?
Well, ain't nobody but.
Why, you was only just...
His hand shows a short height.
You sure growed up. All of a sudden, like...
Sounds if they run that fox to ground.
Gracie looks up at him.
I said them hound dogs run the fox to ground. You better be getting along.
Reckon I have.
He stands up straight and waves.
I'll be seeing you.
Hoping.
He does a wide-eyed double take, then marches off with his rifle. Gracie watches from the corner of her eyes as he climbs over the fence to the hill. She looks down for a moment, then turns back toward him and smiles. With her head cocked, she continues brushing her hair. Later, at the York cabin, Alvin stands at a mirror, struggling to comb his shaggy hair.
I got a gal at the head of the holler. Oh, he ain't come till the end.
His family stares at him.
Big dog bark and the little one bite you. Ma.
He pulls hair from his comb.
Yeah?
When you and Pa got hitched, what did Pa have to set up with?
Well, Pa had this here farm, and a mule, and $6.
What'd Grandpa have?
Grandpa had this here farm, pair of horses. The mare was in foal.
George aims his rifle.
I reckon I wouldn't, George.
Geese in the pond and ducks in the ocean. Oh, do you eat them?
Alvin looks down at his overalls.
Oh. Sure ripped down here. You reckon you could fix it?
I reckon. Come over here, Alvin.
He stands next to his mother at a spinning wheel.
Lean over.
Alvin bends away from her.
You're figuring on setting up, ain't you, son?
Yes, ma'am.
Getting married?
Who's it gonna be?
Gracie Williams.
Gracie Williams?
She sews the seat of his overalls.
Esther yet?
No, I ain't.
Alvin turns to her.
What's the matter?
I ain't said nothing.
She bites off the end of the thread.
Reckon that'll hold.
Reckon it better.
Alvin takes his hat from a post and heads out the door. His mother resumes her work at the spinning wheel and shakes her head. Now, Gracie sits on her porch. Beside her, a dark-haired man holds out a skein of yarn between his hands.
Hold that away, Zip.
Gracie rolls it into a ball.
Figuring on going to that there shindig next Saturday night, Miss Gracie?
Well, I ain't been asked.
Well, you've been asked now.
Zeb grins sheepishly.
Can't say, Zeb. I have to think it over.
Well, I don't...
Across the porch, an old bearded man reads the Bible.
You could be a-coming if you wanted to, Miss Gracie.
Maybe I could, and maybe I couldn't.
Alvin steps through the fence gate.
Why, it's Alvin York.
Howdy, Miss Gracie.
Howdy, Alvin. You're known Zeb Andrews, ain't you?
Howdy.
Zeb turns away coldly.
Knitting, Zeb?
Gracie takes the yarn.
He was just a helping me. I weren't expecting you to be a calling so soon.
Well, I said I'd be seeing you.
Last time I seen Alvin, he was chasing a fox. He stopped here for a spell to kind of catch his breath.
Gracie and Alvin smile at each other.
Did you kill that fox, Alvin?
I sure did. We run him
was
down.
Was it a gray fox or a red?
Red.
Just to the side
why,
of that
red
ridge,
fox,
you know?
Ain't worth nothing this time of year.
That little holler...
Alvin scowls.
This one, Wire.
And Asa begat Josiah, and Josiah begat Joshua.
It's just Uncle Lige talking to himself. Zeb here was telling me there's going to be a dance over to Thompson's Mill.
Well, yeah, I hear that when
Ed Morgan's going to do the fiddling. And I was figuring
just about the best fiddler in these here parts, he is.
He ain't.
Well, if he ain't, who be?
Todd Haskins?
Yeah, I can't hold a candle to Ed.
You're a thinking.
I'm a knowing.
Oh, you are you?
Now, hush up, you two. There ain't no call for fussing over a fiddler.
We weren't a fussing, I were telling him.
Well, I'm a telling you.
The way I figure, Ed's better at the jigging, and Tom can sure fiddle the square.
It biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder.
Uncle Lige there was telling me the corn's right good this harvesting. How's the crops up your way, Alvin?
Oh, we figure to get about 20 bushel to the acre.
We're going to get about 60.
Well, there's a heap of difference tricks farming the bottom land and the top.
Well, there sure is.
I reckon.
You know, I don't see how you get 5 bushels off of that there land of yours.
Now look here, Zeb Andrews.
Alvin's eyes shift, then the corner of his mouth curls up bashfully.
Miss Gracie, I'd sure be much obliged if I could have a cup of water.
Got some nipping cider.
Well, that'd go mighty good.
I'll be getting it.
And the lion shall lie down with the lamb.
As Gracie disappears inside, Alvin turns to Zeb, patting his fingers against his fist. He slowly walks around the side of the porch, then grabs Zeb by his shirt and pulls him away. Meanwhile, inside, Gracie ladles some cider from a barrel into 2 tin cups. She hangs the ladle on the barrel's rim, sets a lid on top, and carries the cups outside. On the porch, she carefully steps around her Uncle Lige and 2 hound dogs.
Here's your cider. It's coming from the... Zeb.
Beyond the yard's fence, Zeb limps off down a distant hill.
Whoa, what's he?
I reckon he lit out.
Well, ain't he coming back?
Alvin sips his cider.
No, he ain't.
That strikes me mighty queer.
Yes?
Whatsoever thy hand findeth to do it with thy might.
Alvin sheepishly taps his fingers on his knee.
Alvin, you was fighting.
Twa'n't much.
Alvin York, you ain't a fitting to come a visiting a girl.
Well, he ain't got no business around here anyhow.
As much business as you have, Alvin York.
No, he ain't.
Well, why ain't he?
Well, he ain't, because...
Because why?
Well, because I'm a-going to marry you.
You what?
I'm a-going to marry you.
Now, Alvin, you stop that. Don't you be saying things like that. Don't you be saying them.
Well, I hear.
You ain't right. Well, you hear, ain't you?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, you can't. Well, you might have told me about it.
That's what I'm doing.
Well, I never... Look here. I wouldn't have you on a Christmas tree, Alvin York. Fine husband you'd make.
I thought Zeb Andrews would make a better one.
Well, how should I know? Maybe he would.
Zeb Andrews got a piece of bottom land. That's it, ain't it?
Gracie shoots a wounded glance at him.
You're thinking that's it, are you? Folks say you're no good except for fighting and hell raising, and I'm thinking they're plumb right.
If I had a piece of bottom land, I guess it'd make a heap of difference, wouldn't it?
A piece of bottom land?
Well, I can get some.
Well, go and get it. I ain't caring.
There ain't nothing I can get if I set my mind to it.
You don't think much of yourself, do you?
Yes, sir. I do.
Amen.
Alvin storms off through the gate. Gracie watches him leave. She runs back to the house. Elsewhere, Alvin walks with his thumbs tucked under the straps of his overalls. He throws his legs over a fence and strolls through the light fog, passing tall sheaves of dried corn stalks. Looking down, he slows to a stop, then kneels to the ground and collects a handful of soil. He lifts it up, rubbing it with his thumb, then holds it to his nose and takes a sniff. Alvin looks off pensively as he continues walking forward with the soil in his hand. Later, at the York cabin, Alvin enters and shuts the door behind him. Walking past Rosie in bed, he heads to the stove and picks up a plate. His mother sits at the table darning a sock. He sprinkles the handful of soil onto the plate, then takes a seat next to his mother. Staring down intently, he removes his hat, then runs his fingers through the dirt. He looks up to find his mother watching him questioningly. Alvin slides the plate to her.
There's bottomland soil, ain't it?
Alvin nods, then pulls the plate away from her.
Queer how the folks that lives on the bottom looks down on the folks on top. We're always that way.
She looks up at her son.
Ain't no changing it.
Well, I'm gonna change it. I'm gonna get us a piece of bottom land.
Pa set out to get himself a piece of bottom land once. Nary a man ever tried harder. Like to kill himself trying. It was a long time before he gave up. But he had to in the end.
Well, I ain't a setting myself up as a better man than Pa. I reckon I ain't half as good. But I'm a knowing where there's a piece of bottom land to be had.
He stares at her earnestly.
And I'm a-gonna get it.
A smile creeps across his mother's face.
Maybe you will.
Daytime. On a farm, Alvin and a gray-bearded man stand in front of a mule.
How old you say this here mule be?
9 years. But Abraham's sound. Yes, he are.
The bearded man scrutinizes the mule's frame.
He's kind of puzzled, got it appears to me.
Nary a bit. He's just mighty well fed, that's all.
Well, I reckon I might allow you $30 on him.
$30?
Yeah.
You say $30?
Yeah.
Well, he's worth 40 if he's worth a cent.
Then he ain't worth a cent.
A wooden basket sits on the mule's back.
What's all this here you got?
Well, there's 24 pullets.
$6.
Well, that's 25 cents a piece. They're worth twice that much.
Not to me, they ain't. What are these?
Them's prime winter pelts, Mr. Tompkins.
Mighty poor. They won't fetch much, eh? I might allow you $1.50 a piece on them.
Well, I can get $3 a piece for them in Jimtown.
That's quite a waste of Jimtown. Let's see now. It's $40.50 so far. What else you got?
Well, there's 2 sacks of rabbit skins, this here clock, and a sack of goose feathers.
I tell you, Alvin, I'll give you 50 United States dollars for the whole caboodle.
$50 for everything?
That's the best I can do.
Sounds like an awful little.
Take it or leave it.
Can you do any better on the price of the land?
Not a cent, $120.
Well, how much time have I got to pay for the rest?
60 days.
Well, it's a bargain. I'll take it.
Well, then I reckon we can put it in writing.
Mr. Tompkins pulls out a logbook.
You understand now, don't you, Alvin? If I don't get my money before the 60 days, you lose the whole caboodle and you don't get the land. Now, $70 is a lot of money for a fellow like you to get his hands on. It's more than $1 a day. Now then, 60 days is all you got.
Alvin grabs his overall straps and nods.
60 days and 60 nights.
What?
Well, the way I figure, if I count the nights, too, I got an eye on the 4 months to pay you off.
Well, that's one way of figuring it.
Now, Alvin faces a man baling hay.
Well, I'll tell you. I was figuring on taking them rocks out myself, Alvin. But if you're willing to take on the job at 75 cents a day, well,
I'll take it.
All right.
Yes, sir.
He climbs the fence between them. Later, Alvin carries a rock to a horse-drawn cart and drops it in. He wipes a dirty arm across his face. Now, at the York cabin, Alvin enters with his rifle. He drops a sack on the table, removes his hat, and sets his rifle on a horizontal beam. Nearby, his mother rolls over in bed and watches him. Alvin removes several coins from the pocket of his overalls and places them inside a small chest on the fireplace mantel. He then picks up a calendar for August 1916. On the page's grid, the first 2 days each show an amount of 75 cents written in. A running total jotted underneath shows $2.75, then $3.50. Alvin pencils in another 75 cents for August 3rd and records a new total of $4.25. As he sets the calendar back on the mantel, his mother smiles to herself and turns back to her pillow. daytime, Alvin stands behind a droopy-faced man who works at a sharpening wheel.
I was thinking maybe I could shoe your mules for you.
Sorry, Alvin. Had them shot just yesterday over to Possum Trot. Might give you 2-3 days' work, though. Splitting rails.
That's good.
Later, a sledgehammer drives a stone wedge into a log. More wedges extend along its cracked center. As Alvin hammers them in, George chops at the widening crack with an axe. Now, at the general store, Pastor Pyle handles a pelt as Alvin stands facing him across the counter.
Oh, reckon it's worth about...
He blows on it.
$3.
$3? Well, that's a right fair price, Pastor. I only worked 2 days to get it.
It's worth it.
He counts out $3.
To me.
Now, Nora the horse stands hitched to chains that connect to a tree stump behind her. As George urges the horse forward, Alvin pries at the stump with a pole. The stump wrenches free, its clumped roots giving way. Later, Alvin guides his wooden plow along a hilltop with Nora's sagging reins looped around the back of his neck. Gracie approaches from the opposite direction, her dark dress silhouetted against the cloudy sky.
Hold on.
As the horse stops, Gracie runs over to Alvin, holding a shawl over her head and shoulders.
Well, Miss Gracie, I was thinking you was to the dance.
No, I ain't at the dance.
No. No, I can see that.
Alvin,
Yeah?
She moves closer.
Alvin, I just...
Yeah?
Alvin...
She leans in and kisses him, then pulls back, agape. As she kisses him again, she gives him a tender embrace. This time, as they separate, Gracie's gape turns into a smile.
That's what I was wanting to tell you.
She drops her smile and holds her hand over her mouth, then runs off bashfully. Watching her go, Alvin blinks and grins.
Get up, Noah!
Alvin guides the plow forward. Nighttime. By lamplight, Alvin chops into a tree stump with an axe. Now, he pitchforks a clump of hay. Later, he plows a field. Later still, he swings a sledgehammer. Now, at the York cabin, Alvin lumbers toward the fireplace and stretches his back. In bed, his mother lifts her head from her pillow and watches him drop a handful of coins into the small chest. Alvin sets it back on the mantel and picks up the calendar, which now reads September 1916. On the page's grid, each day through the 23rd is marked with a different daily wage at the top and a running total at the bottom. Alvin pencils in 55 cents for September 24th and arrives at a total of $44.35. He sets the calendar back on the mantel. Removing his hat, he wearily steps over to his bed and massages the back of his neck. He pulls the sheets aside and lies down, still wearing his dirty white shirt and overalls. Later, Mrs. York ties her robe closed as she walks past the fireplace to Alvin's bed. She takes the sheets at her son's feet and gently pulls them over his sleeping body. Her brow furrowed, she straightens up and looks off pensively.
Lord, Lord, if you can, help him to be a gift in his land. Amen.
Now on the York farm.
All right, George.
Two long poles pry at a boulder.
Again.
George pushes on one of the poles.
Again.
Under his own pole, Alvin uses a rock as a fulcrum. As Alvin bears down on his pole, it snaps. Alvin sits up slowly on one knee and rests his hand on a felled tree trunk nearby. He yanks irritably on his broken pole.
It ain't no use, George. I can't do it.
Yes, you can.
I tell you, I can't do it.
George looks off across the canyon. Alvin does the same, then gets to his feet, flashing a frustrated grin.
My time's up tomorrow night. There ain't enough money for the bottom land. I can't get the rest. How? How am I gonna do it?
Sweat glistening on his face, Alvin tosses his fractured pole away and takes George's. The boulder budges slightly as he prods it underneath. At night, a fist raps on a house's front door. It's Alvin, standing with an axe over his shoulder. The door opens.
Howdy, Alvin.
Mr. Tompkins, I got to talk to
you. Well, I reckon this morning what talks the loudest. You got the rest of your payment?
Well, no, I ain't got it all.
That's bad.
But I can get it for you by Saturday.
Well, Saturday ain't Tuesday.
All I'm asking is for 4 extra days.
How can I be sure you'll get it by Saturday?
Well, there's a beef and turkey shooter coming up. You must have heard about it.
Yeah?
Well, I'm aiming to cut 5 targets and win the beef critter and then put him up for cash money.
Things likely.
Oh, yes, it are.
That'll take some shooting, Alvin.
But I could do it.
Well, I'd like to do you a favor, Alvin. But
will you?
There's another fella asking for that land.
You ain't letting him have it.
I was telling him your option was up Tuesday.
But I got to have them extra days, Mr. Tompkins. I just got to.
Oh, I oughtn't to do it, but I reckon he can wait till Saturday.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Tompkins. I'll sure get it for you. Yes, I sure will.
Daytime. In the woods, a turkey peeks its head up from behind a mossy log.
Well, missed him, but you cut wood.
It ain't the log you're supposed to shoot, Zeke. It's the critter behind it. You better get yourself a pair of them specs, Zeke.
He won't stick his head up so I can get a shot at him.
Jim Corey, next shooter.
An unshaven man carries a rifle to a cleared path. Off in the distance, the turkey pokes its head up once more. Jim stands behind a log marker and peers down the length of his rifle.
Reckon he's laying an egg back there, Jim?
Yeah, he might be.
You missed.
Doggone it, that turkey can sure hide.
Maybe he wants to keep his head. Elvin York, next shooter. Bust him in the eye, Alvin, if he winks at you.
Shoot him when he ain't looking.
Alvin licks his thumb and wipes his rifle's front sight with it.
You better sight a mighty fine, Alvin. That there's the last turkey.
As Alvin raises his rifle, the turkey ducks down.
You can't hit him if you can't see him, Alvin.
The turkey's head bobs up, then down.
Better wait till he goes to roost, Alvin.
Alvin squints. He imitates the bird call.
You got meat.
You! You sure busted him wide open.
I reckon you just gotta talk their language, Alvin.
I reckon you do.
You sure got him, Alvin. Ought to be eating good if he ain't too tough.
This year bird ain't for eating.
Come on, fellas. Get your targets ready for the beef shoot.
A man pours molten lead, making bullets.
A dollar a piece. The 2 best shooters get the hindquarters. The next 2 get the forequarters. The 5th man gets the hide and a taller. The 6th man gets to dig the lead out of the tree. All right, pay your dollar and draw your number.
Load her up careful, George. We got a long ways to paddle.
A boy carries over the turkey.
Here you be, Alvin.
Thank you.
Hey, Zeke, you ain't paid your dollar yet.
Why, sure enough, I reckon it just slipped my mind.
How much for this here bird?
Alvin hands the turkey carcass to Lem.
Well, I can't give any more than 1 shot, I reckon.
I'll be taking it and give me 4 more.
5 shots? Am I hearing you right, Alvin?
I'm wanting 5 shots, Lem.
You figuring to get that hull critter?
My mind's sort of running that away.
Where'd you get them ideas, Alvin?
You sure got some shooters in you.
They'll get a chance when I put the critter up again. I'm needing cash money, and I'm going to get it.
Ain't nobody ever cut 5 centers, less than it were Dan'l Boone. And you ain't wearing no coonskin hat.
I ain't a needing one.
Later, a contestant lies on his belly, aiming his rifle over a log. A hole appears in a forked piece of paper.
I'll buy 8 next.
Luke pries the target board from a tree trunk, and a bearded man hammers up another in its place. The next contestant aims his rifle. His shot lands beneath the target fork.
Number 9.
Luke pulls the board from the tree and shakes his head. Across the clearing, Alvin licks his thumb and rubs it across his front sight, then lies on his stomach behind the log. George watches his brother. Alvin tilts back the brim of his hat, sets up his sight line, and carefully wraps his index finger around the trigger. His shot lands in the wood right above the notch cut into the paper. Now, one after the other, the contestants continue taking turns shooting. While most hit the paper, Alvin's shots all land squarely inside the target fork. Luke steps over to the target board.
How do they stand so far, Luke?
Ain't nobody cut center but Alvin York. Alvin a cut dead center all 4 times.
A man hammers a new target board to the tree.
2 more shooters. Tom Carver, you're first. Alvin's got 1 more coming. Get going, Tom.
I was
Tom, a lanky man, carries his rifle to the log and lies down on his stomach. Alvin watches as he loads his own rifle. Tom cocks back the hammer. He hits just above center, then faces Alvin and nods.
You better draw down, Alvin.
You got to beat Tom's shot if you want to get the whole beef, Alvin.
Smiling, Alvin crouches down behind the log. George watches with a furrowed brow as Alvin cocks the hammer. Nearby, Gracie stands beside Rosie and Mrs. York. All three stare intently as Alvin closes one eye and aims.
What do it look like?
Looks like plumb middle to me.
The contestants run across the clearing to the target. Gracie beams. Later, Pastor Pyle uses calipers to measure the distances on each contestant's target board.
Tom ain't more than a hair off, but Alvin done cut dead center, fair and square.
Howdy, Daniel Boone.
There's your beef, Alvin. It's all yourn.
Five centers is right. Smart shooting.
Ain't seen the light since the big wind.
Well, any of you fellas want another chance of that critter, why, just drop a dollar apiece in this here hat.
Are you shooting again us, Alvin?
No, I ain't. Not this time.
I ain't got a dollar.
Let me know.
Now, Mr. Tompkins and Zeb arrive.
Howdy, Miss Moran.
Hello, boys.
Howdy. Y'all come over to see the shooting?
Yeah. It's all over now. Alvin York cut center five times and won Lem's beef critter on the hoof.
Alvin won Lem's beef critter?
Sure did.
Well, I'll be dang.
And he's putting them up again.
Well, boys, get your targets ready. Well, Mr. Tompkins, I was just coming over to see you. Yeah, you beat $26, and I got the rest of it right here in my pocket.
Well, I'm right sorry, Alvin, but I just sold that bottom land to Zeb here.
You're telling me you...
Now, don't go rare enough, Alvin. I never figured you'd get that money. Anyway, your time was rightly up last Tuesday.
Why, you allowed I could have more
But I want in writing.
But I was a-taking your word for it.
And Zeb here paid me cash money all down.
He did he? It ain't my fault. He sold it to me.
The other men hold Alvin back from Zeb and Mr. Tompkins.
Wait a minute. Take it out of here. You better get both of you.
Ain't no use, Alvin. You only be fixing yourself for trouble.
Alvin watches the two men leave.
I was aiming to get that piece of land.
It's want to be. Mind you, Alvin, we can't always figure the ways of Providence.
Alvin pulls himself from the other men's grips and storms past Gracie. She follows him as he collects his jacket and rifle.
Alvin, it don't make no difference.
It do to me.
He turns and walks off. Standing among the spectators, Alvin's two friends glance at each other.
Come on, Buck.
Ike and Buck follow their friend down the path as Gracie stands watching them. Now at the border saloon, Buck dances with a plump woman. Woo! Lightning flashes through the window as they do-si-do.
Big woman. She's about that biggest one I ever did see.
Ike and Alvin sit at a table.
Three women in one she is, Alvin. A whole passel of women. Hey, before I marry her, be a bigamus. See? Big mus?
Yes, sir.
Bigamus.
Told me I could have them extra days.
Oh, come on, Alvin.
His word won't no count.
Forget about me, Tompkins, will you? Quit pestering yourself. It ain't no use. Look at that there big woman. Why don't you have a turn with her, Alvin? Take you back to your log rolling day.
Business is business.
Well, once around hers, is twice around Bear Mountain. Look at Buck here, Alvin. He's plumb tuckered out.
I sure am.
Well, he might be. Dancing around a whole castle of women that way.
And about him, Mata.
Sure.
That land were mine. Ain't nobody gonna get it away from me.
I'd sure like to see you toad hop her about, Alvin.
I'm a-drinking again, Nate Tompkins.
Now, how about that there big woman?
Alvin, you better be staying here.
Let go of me.
Well, we go along with you.
What I got to do is my own.
Alvin pulls away from them and heads past the dance floor to the front door. He takes his rifle and staggers out. Buck and Ike stand watching.
Sure ain't a good night for a killing.
No stopping him now, I reckon.
Outside, Alvin rides Nora down a muddy path. A lightning bolt strikes down and hits a tree behind him, splitting it in two. Alvin pushes on, his grim expression unchanged. As a brilliant flash of light appears beside him, he pulls back on the reins. Lightning forks from the clouds, thrashing downward in bright, jagged lines. On the ground, Alvin's rifle lies in the mud beneath a swirl of smoke. The end of its barrel is split in two. Next to it, Alvin lies on his side. He slowly rolls to his back and takes a look around. As he sits up, another lightning flash illuminates the warped firearm by his side. Alvin looks back and forth from the rifle to his hand, then stares off ponderously, shaking out his fingers in the rain. Nearby, Nora lies on her side in the mud. The dark mare stirs, then sits up. Alvin stands up with her and takes her reins. He runs his hand along her leg, then reaches into the mud and picks up a smoking horseshoe. He quickly drops it, shaking his fingers. Another lightning bolt tears through the sky. Alvin leads Nora down the path to the wooden church house. Light shines through the building's tall windows. Alvin walks past a hitching post to the church's front door. Alvin tucks down his jacket collar and enters the building. Alvin slowly shuts the door behind him. Across the room, Pastor Pyle conducts the hymn from his pulpit. The pastor's timekeeping hand slows down as he sees the new arrival. Alvin removes his hat.
Give me that old-time religion.
Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. Give me that old-time religion. It's good enough for me.
It was good for your father.
Alvin steps down the aisle.
Makes me love everybody.
Makes me love everybody.
Gracie smiles as Alvin steps past. He stops beside his mother.
It was good for Paul and Silas.
It was good for Paul and Silas.
Alvin begins singing.
Give me that old time religion.
Give me that old time religion.
The congregation gathers around Alvin and ushers him forward.
It was good for the prophet Daniel.
It was good for the prophet Daniel. It was good for the prophet Daniel. It was good enough for me.
It was tried in the fiery furnace.
Alvin kneels. Pastor Pyle reaches out and shakes Alvin's hand. Now, at the Tompkins farm, Mr. Tompkins crouches along the side of a carriage, greasing the front axle. Alvin approaches him.
Howdy, Mr. Tompkins.
Mr. Tompkins picks up a wrench.
Stand where you are.
Won't you come any closer?
Well, Mr. Tompkins, I just...
Come closer and I'll hit you.
No need of getting riled, Mr. Tompkins. I ain't looking for no trouble with you.
What you doing around here?
Well, I wanted to talk to you about...
What about?
About Abraham.
That mule's legally mine. You ain't got no claim on him.
Well, I ain't denying he's
yours. Stay where you are if you'd want to be laid out in two pieces.
He brandishes the wrench.
Well, I was a-figuring on a-buying Abraham back.
Buying him back?
Yes, sir. My mule's kind of poorly, and something done happened to him, and I sure need a mule.
Are you meaning it?
Yes, sir.
No hard feelings?
Well, shucks, no, Mr. Tompkins.
Well, I'll be damned.
And there's one more thing. I'm asking your forgiveness for a flaring up at you the way I'd done. It were Satan a-speaking out of me.
Mr. Tompkins sets down the wrench.
Zeke was a-telling me, but I couldn't live.
About what?
That you got religion.
Well, that's a fact, Mr. Tompkins.
Well, I'll be there.
Well, I sure would like to be a-buying that there mule back.
You would, eh?
Yeah, how much would you be asking for him?
Well, let's see. You said he was worth $40, and I allowed you $30 on him.
That's right.
Well, you can have him back for $20.
Oh, Mr. Tompkins, Abraham's worth a sight more than that.
Maybe he is, but seeing as how I'm trying to do the fair and square thing, Alvin, $20.
I reckon I know what you're thinking. It's more blessed to give than to receive.
Maybe. Come on, get your meal. And another thing, I'm going to give you back the clock you sold me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it don't run no how.
Later, Alvin leads Abraham past a fence. On the other side, a workhorse harnessed to one end of a broad wooden turnstile circles a sugar mill. Zeb and a worker feed sugar cane into the 3-foot mill. Zeb hides as Alvin approaches a man by a steaming vat.
Howdy, Mr. Andrews.
Howdy.
I'd kind of like to see Zeb. Are you here about?
Maybe he is.
I sure would like to have words with him.
Mr. Andrews stands to face Alvin.
You coming peaceful?
Yes, sir, Mr. Andrews. I ain't looking for no trouble.
Mr. Andrews looks to the mill.
Zeb, come out of there.
Zeb peeks warily.
Sorry, B.
Alvin walks over to the mill.
Howdy.
What you be wanting with me, Alvin York?
I wanted to talk to you, Zeb, about that there piece of land.
I bought it. It's mine.
I know it, but sure it's yours, Zeb, but...
Alvin ducks under the swinging turnstile.
But Nate Tompkins was a figure in the...
I ain't a-caring what Nate Tompkins was a figure.
Well, Nate was just thinking that
it's Nate, mine, and I'm going to keep it.
Well, sure it's yours, Zeb, but if you only allow me to talk, why,
ain't
I...
Ain't nobody a-holding you.
Oh, yes, they are. Well, anyway, Nate was a-thinking that you're being so busy here, maybe you need some extra help on t'other piece of land.
Well, what's that got to do with you?
Well, I'm asking you for the job.
You mean you're aiming to work for me?
I be, if you allow me.
Well, sure. Well, that sure got me stumped. I was a-buying that land just to spite you.
Well, I sure don't blame you none.
Well, maybe we can figure it so you can sharecrop the piece. Then you'd kind of be a-working for yourself.
No, I ain't asking for anything extra,
well,
Zeb.
If you can farm that bottom land like you've been doing the top, I reckon that land will be yours in a couple of seasons.
Well, with the help of the Lord, I'll make you a good crop.
Later with Gracie.
Like I'm saying, Miss Gracie, I ain't ever seen a prettier piece of land than there Andrews' farm. Corn is thicker than fur on a squirrel, and I seen 8 beef critters a-grazing in the pasture there.
There are a lot of critters.
And that's Zeb Andrews. Sure air a forgiven man.
Harry?
Yes, sir.
Be sitting, Alvin.
Alvin sits by her as she peels potatoes.
And a Christian man, if I ever seen one.
Reckon so.
What I done to him that night we were visiting you weren't right. The devil was a-pushing me from behind.
It were too dark. I couldn't see.
I didn't have no call to come twixt you and him.
What are you getting at, Alvin York?
Well, all I'm aiming to say, Miss Gracie, is... An upstanding man like Zeb Andrews would make a gal a right smart husband.
What's that?
And if you change your mind about Zeb, well, I reckon I could...
You could what?
I could rightly understand.
Oh, you could you?
Standing, she shakes her knife at him.
Looky here, Alvin York. If I wanted Zeb Andrews for a husband, I reckon I could get him without your acting so noble. I done kissed you, didn't I?
Yes.
Well, I don't go around kissing men I ain't going to be a-marrying. Now you be a-listening to me. Am I marrying a piece of land?
Yes. No.
Or a beef critter?
No.
Or a field of corn? No, it's you I'm marrying. Ain't nobody else in this here world. Are you hearing me?
Yes.
Well, then don't you talk that way to me again, Alvin York. Don't you ever.
The bench tips and the bucket of water and potatoes drenches Alvin. On the ground, Alvin watches Gracie run off, then shakes his head.
The Lord sure do move in mysterious ways.
Later, at church, Alvin sits with children.
So that's what the Lord... done said to Cain when he didn't kill Abel. It was a way of telling him that he wouldn't get no crops no more, and anybody that's a farmer knows what that means.
Alvin, how do you know that it happened just that way, seeing how you weren't there?
Well, the book says so, and there ain't nothing written in the book that ain't the truth.
Outside, Luke, the mailman, charges down the road on horseback.
So, a long time after that, when the Lord was a-given Moses the Ten Commandments, he was a-saying, thou shalt not kill. Now go ahead with the reading.
Outside.
Hey! Hey! Lord! Hey! Hey! Pastor Kyle!
What's happened, Luke?
It's war. President Wilson's done declared war against Germany.
You don't say.
Yes, sir. Says so right here in the sheriff's paper.
Newspaper headlines read, Wilson signs draft measure, and millions to register for draft. At the general store, a bulletin reads, Attention, register Tuesday, June the 5th, 1917.
Here you are, Jim. I reckon I won't wait to be drafted. I'm giant up as soon as the corn's in.
Me too.
Hello, boy, Tom.
I heard my daddy talk about fighting the Yankees, and my granddaddy done fought in the Revolution. Sure wish I was a young fella.
Well, come along, Zeke. You load him and I'll shoot him.
Alvin passes men registering.
Hi, Alvin.
Hey, Alvin, what about you? You giant up now or you waiting to be called?
I reckon I'm a-waiting. Howdy, I...
Alvin approaches Pastor Pyle at the counter.
Oh, howdy, Alvin.
Morning, Pastor. Reckon I need some cool aisle.
I'm glad you come in, Alvin. I was going to send for you.
You was?
You ain't registered yet, have you, Alvin?
Of course I ain't. Is that the new seed you was going to send for?
He dips his hand in the sack as the pastor comes out from behind the counter.
It's Tuesday, Alvin. You only got till 6 o'clock.
I ain't going to register.
The pastor glances toward the registration table, then takes Alvin aside.
You gotta register, Alvin.
I ain't going to. I ain't going to war. War is killing, and the book's again killing. So war is again the book.
You're plumb right, Alvin. You got the using kind of religion, not the meeting house kind, but you
can't... The kind I got, the kind you teached me.
I know that, and I hate to be telling you, but I don't want to see you get in no trouble. Now, you got to register, and there ain't no way you can get out of it.
You mean they can make you go to war, even if it's again, which you think is right?
No, they won't make you do that. It's what I want to tell you. Come here.
He takes Alvin's arm and leads him to the counter.
It's right here.
He picks up a pamphlet.
Wait a minute. Yeah. There it is right there, see? Members of well-recognized religious sects whose existing creed forbids its members to participate in war are entitled to request exemption from military service.
What's that there exemption?
Well, that means you, if you're exempted, you don't have to go.
Well, how do we get this exemption?
Well, you got to write a letter to the draft board.
Well, that all there to it?
Yep.
Well, sure, I'll register. Will you write the letter for me? Well,
I'd be glad to, Alvin. Come on over here.
Now, Alvin and the pastor stand in a schoolhouse.
Therefore, we find that we can't consider your church a well-recognized religious sect organized and existing May 18, 1917. We find further that it has no special creed except the Bible, which can be interpreted by its members as they choose. And finally, there's nothing in the creed of the church expressly forbidden its members to participate in war. Therefore, your application for exemption is denied.
Is this the last word, or has he got someplace to appeal?
He can appeal to the district board at Nashville and finally to the general board in Washington.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Alvin and Pastor Pyle head to the door.
I'll be writing them appeals for you, Alvin, so don't you be worrying.
Oh, I ain't a-worrying.
Now, outside, Alvin leads Gracie to a rickety bridge that's partially submerged in a stream.
We'll be fixing this here bridge.
Gracie carefully follows him across. They climb a short grassy hill and stop under the shade of a tree. Before them, a sunny meadow spreads toward the distant hills.
There it is. We'll be building a house right over there by that tree. And the big room is going to be...
He draws in the dirt with a stick.
The big room's going to be right here in front, just like this. And it's going to have three windows. And the kitchen will be here. And it's going to be good and big, too. And there'll be a stove.
Why?
Well, right about there. And I'm going to build you one of them sinks. And I'm going to give you a pump so you won't have to carry no water from the spring.
A pump, Alvin?
Sure.
Alvin, pumps cost a heap of money.
Well, we're going to have curtains in the windows and carpets on the floors. It ain't gonna take very long either if the Lord keeps a shower and his blessings on me. Won't take more than 2 or 3 years, I reckon.
Just to think, in 2 or 3 years, a house right there where we're looking. And it'll be our house.
Alvin!
A boy runs up.
What do you want?
Pastor Pa wants to see you, Alvin.
Well, Gracie and me's kind of busy right now. Well, tell him I'll stop by the store on the way home.
He said he wants to see you right off. He said you best be a-coming.
Well, tell him I'll be there.
Shucks, just when we was having fun. Would you be a-telling me again sometime?
I sure will.
He helps Gracie up and starts off with her. Alvin stops to take one last look around. Now, at the general store, Alvin walks up to the counter.
Howdy, Pastor.
Howdy, Alvin. I got right bad news for you. Word just come. They were taking you for the Army.
Well, that can't be. That letter we done sent to Washington says that I was again fighting and...
They ain't going to exempt you, Alvin. You got to report to Nashville tomorrow night.
I ain't a-going.
You ain't got no choice. This was the last appeal.
I don't care about that. I ain't a-going.
You got to go, Alvin. It's the law.
What kind of law is it that says a man's got to go again the book and its teachings?
Well, I reckon there ain't no answer, but... If you don't go, he'll be coming after you.
Well, they won't get me. I'll go back in them hills.
And they'll put hounds on your trail, and they'll follow you no matter how far back you go.
Then they better not catch up with me, because they'll be a-wishing they hadn't.
Seeing Pastor Pyle look away from him, Alvin lowers his head and swallows.
Sorry, Pastor. Them sinful words. I wasn't thinking of what I was saying.
Alvin purses his lips.
I'll go.
The pastor raises his bushy eyebrows and smiles.
War's away to the other side of the ocean, Alvin. Lots of things can happen before you get there. You put your trust in the Lord and he look out for you.
I done forgot the Lord.
Pastor Pyle nods.
Ain't never gonna forget him again.
Goodbye, Alvin.
He shakes Alvin's hand, then watches him leave. Now, at the York cabin, Alvin's sister helps him pack a bag while his mother stands by, watching with a furrowed brow. As George joins them, Alvin packs the last item and closes the bag. Dressed in a coat and tie, he looks at his family.
Well?
His mother stares at him. Alvin looks down.
I reckon these will do till I get fixed up in government clothes.
Mrs. York nods as Rosie holds her hand to her mouth. Alvin sets a dark fedora on his head and faces his watchful mother.
The corn's doing right good on the South Hill. Might need a little extra hoeing.
Mrs. York gives a few quick nods. Alvin reaches down to his bag.
Mule's at the gate. We've got a long ways to go.
Alvin looks down.
Well, you'll be taking care of things from now on, George.
Sure will.
Guess you'll be needing a man-sized gun. You're gonna have my rifle.
I'm thanking you.
Alvin gives him a slight smile, then turns toward the door.
Well?
Mrs. York's weary eyes remain fixed on him.
I'm going.
He grips his mother's arm affectionately, then steps past her. Gracie arrives at the door.
I had to see you again, Alvin. I just had to.
She hugs him, burying her face in his jacket.
Now.
As she pulls away, he tilts her head to face him.
No, don't you be looking at me, please.
A tear streams down her cheek.
Don't want you to be remembering me like this. Close your eyes, please.
Nothing.
Are they closed?
Alvin nods, his eyes squeezed shut. Gracie looks up at him, wraps her hands around his neck, and gives him a kiss. As she backs away, he slowly opens his eyes. She turns and runs out. Alvin watches her go.
I'll be a coming back.
Alvin glances back at his family, then heads out. George follows him while Rosie and Mrs. York wait in the doorway. Outside, Alvin carries his bag through the front gate to the road where he surveys the landscape of misty mountains and tall trees. As Rosie and Mrs. York slowly make their way to the gate, Alvin takes the reins of his mule, Abraham, and climbs on. He then helps George mount up behind him. Alvin turns the mule to face his mother and sister.
I'll be coming back.
He starts off down the dirt road with George. At the front gate, Rosie turns to her mother.
Ma, what are they a-fighting for?
I don't rightly know, child.
Mrs. York shakes her head.
I don't rightly know.
Now, words appear over rows of long barracks, Camp Gordon, Georgia. At the camp, a sergeant walks along a line of soldiers digging a trench.
Come on, you guys.
Hit the dirt and hit it hard.
Okay, sir.
The sergeant stops before a pudgy soldier.
Look, Ross, that's not a teaspoon you've got there. It's a shovel. Lay into it.
Okay, General.
Dig, soldiers, dig. Dig your way straight down to China.
Okay, sir. China? What's the idea of going to China? I thought this war was in Europe.
Beside Ross, Alvin smiles and wipes sweat from his brow.
Parsons. Sergeant Early.
Sergeants Parsons and Early approach a captain.
Which one of your men is York?
He's the big lanky fellow, fourth from the end, sir.
Having any trouble with him?
No, sir. Why?
Down here is a conscientious objector. Keep your eye on him. I want a weekly report.
Yes, sir.
Sergeant Parsons salutes as the captain leaves. The two sergeants watch Alvin dig.
That'll be a big help.
Later in the barracks.
Dig, dig, dig. Whew. I've been working in a subway all my life. Never thought about the guys that dug it. But since I'm in the Army, I sure take my hat off to them.
Subway, you say?
Yeah.
What's this here subway you're talking about?
You mean to say you don't know what a subway is? That guy kidding?
No, they don't have subways where he comes from, I guess.
They haven't. Ain't they civilized? Where you from?
Paul Mall, Valley of the Three Forks of the Wolf.
Where's that?
Tennessee.
Ain't you ever even seen a subway?
Ain't never even heard of one.
You never what? Heard? Heard? What kind of talk is that? Do they all talk that kind of English where you come from?
Well, they ain't the English people down airway. Just Americans.
Well, look. A subway is a big hole in the ground, see? It goes for miles.
Straight down?
Yeah, no. It doesn't go straight down. It goes this way.
Ross motions left and right.
Under the ground?
Under the ground. And trains run through it.
They run through it?
Yeah.
Steam cars?
Steam cars.
They're electric, Alvin. I sure would like to see one of them. You see, they have to run trains under the ground in New York because it's so crowded.
Crowded, I'll say. Look, it's the rush hour. The Bronx Express is just pulling in. I'm standing on a platform holding back the mob. The doors open up and I... You know what I'm talking about?
Just a word now and then.
Well, you see, the people are just coming from work and they want to get home, see? And they want to get into the cars all together. They start pushing. I'm trying to hold them back. Well, anyway, the doors open up and now, buddy, this is where the fun begins. Move back in the cars, I yell. There ain't no room in there, but I yell, move back in the cars. Boy, how I used to push him in. I used to pack him in like sardines in a can. That's why they call me Pusher.
All right, Pusher. That's mess call. Get a move on.
Yes, sir. This is the one bugle call I ain't got no arguments with.
Later, a soldier reads a number off a rifle and hands it to Pusher. Sergeant Early looks on.
241801.
241801. Ross, Michael T. Hey, this one's full of grease. Ain't you got a clean one?
Clean it, buddy, and keep it clean.
Sure. 218-102.
The soldier hands a rifle to Alvin, who stares at it.
York, Alvin C. Anything wrong with it? Well, sure, he's a fine rifle gun. I thought maybe you might have some conscientious objections to it.
No, sir, I ain't.
Careful you don't kill anybody with it till you get to France. Next man.
A lean-faced man steps up.
214-803.
214-803. Thomas,
Bertie. Later, in the barracks, the men clean their new rifles. Sergeant Early approaches Pusher, who proudly wipes down his weapon.
Boy, look at that shine. Is that clean or is that clean? Look, Sarge, you can eat right off the trigger.
Not bad.
The sergeant looks it over, then peers down the barrel.
You call that clean?
What's the matter with it?
Look.
Pusher looks into the barrel.
I don't see nothing.
It's full of grease.
Won't that make the bullet come out faster?
Clean it.
Parsons inspects Alvin's.
That's a good job, York. Did you ever clean a rifle before?
Ain't never cleaned one like that before. I done cleaned my own, though. So you've got a gun of your own, have you?
Yes.
I wouldn't think you'd have one.
The sergeants leave. Alvin licks his thumb and wets his sight, then aims. Now on a shooting range, the privates lie on their stomachs 100 yards from a line of targets.
Well, the next time, get your sling a little higher on your arm.
Okay.
Pull in your necks, soldiers. Those rookies are going to start shooting.
Now remember, you guys, you're using real live ammunition. A bullet hasn't got any brains. It'll hit whatever you aim it at. So don't start murdering each other. All right, let's go. Ready on number 30.
Sergeant Early kneels by Pusher, who reaches for a bullet.
Not yet. We'll try it first. Relax, Ross. Loosen up. Yeah, that's better. Take a deep breath. Whoa. Let a little of it out. Hold it. Remember, keep your sights on the center of the bullseye. Take up the slack on the trigger gradually. Don't pull it. Squeeze it slowly, just like you were squeezing a lemon.
Ready?
He nods.
Mm-hmm. Aim.
I can't hold it no more.
All right, boss, take another.
Pusher takes a deep breath.
Aim. Fire. Look, Ross, you had your thumb sticking straight up in the air, just like that.
Oh, yeah, that gives me balance.
Oh, it gives you balance, does it?
Yeah.
Early hands Pusher a bullet.
Load. Aim. Fire.
Pusher's thumb hits his eye.
Aye.
Maybe that'll teach you to keep your thumb down.
That's something for the rest of you men to remember.
Closing his injured eye, Pusher grimaces as Sergeant Early heads over to Alvin. A small flag waves in front of Pusher's target.
A miss! Miss!
Ready on number 29.
At the target ridge, a soldier slides a paper bullseye into view.
All right, York, let's see what you can do. Aim. Fire.
I ain't much good at this here practicing, Sergeant.
All right, next time get that sling a little higher on your arm. Yes, press your cheek a little closer at the stock.
Yes.
Make sure that front sight divides the rear sight in half.
I reckon I know about that, Sergeant.
Oh, you reckon you know about that, do you? We'll see. Here.
Early hands a bullet to Alvin.
Load. Aim.
Alvin licks his thumb and wets the front sight.
Fire.
A soldier at the targets waves a flag.
A miss!
Miss.
So you know about sighting, do you?
I sure thought I cut plumb center that time.
Then, huh?
I can't no way see how I can miss that whole great big target.
Sharpshooter York requests a remark.
Two men pull down remark the target 29. And spot a small remark hole in the bottom 29. Of the bullseye.
Uh-oh. I didn't see that one.
They mark it with a white circle, then raise the target.
A bullseye, 4 o'clock.
Bullseye.
I can't figure out how I got way down there on the edge. Well, I reckon I can do a little better when I get used to this here rifle gun.
Here's five chances to do better.
Sergeant Early hands Alvin a 5-shot magazine, and Alvin loads it in his rifle.
Fire when ready.
Alvin reaches to wet his sights.
Hey, what are you wetting that front sight for?
Why, it kind of cuts down the haze. I always wet my sights when I'm fixing to do some shooting.
Okay, do some shooting.
Alvin squints as he takes aim. The target slides down, then up again. The white marker is directly in the middle.
Bullseye, dead center.
Bullseye.
Okay, York. You're on your own.
Alvin takes aim. The target slides down, then up again.
Bullseye!
Bullseye!
Again, the white circle marks the center of the bullseye.
Bullseye!
Bullseye!
Again, the target slides down, then up.
Bullseye!
Bullseye!
The men bring down the target once more.
Hey, look at this, right through the marker.
That ain't no rookie, that's Buffalo Bill. Let's see that target, Sergeant.
Bring 29 to the firing line.
One man runs to Sergeant Parsons with Alvin's target. The others gather around.
There's the first shot, and here's the other five here.
I reckon that there gun shoots a mite to the right.
Where'd you learn to shoot, York?
Well, I ain't never learned, Sergeant. Folks back home used to say I could shoot a rifle before I was weaned. But they was exaggerating some.
Later in the barracks, Alvin lines up crayon-sized rifle shells.
Supposing these here cartridges is a flock of wild turkeys a-flying across the ridge, coming this way, see? Right at me. Now, which one of them would you shoot first?
I'd take a crack at all of them and trust the luck.
Well, you wouldn't have no luck that way, Pusher.
No? Well, then I'd pick the motorman.
The what?
The motorman, the guy out in front.
Well, that ain't right either if you want to get more than one turkey.
Which one of them's got the most meat on them?
Yeah, what's the answer?
Well, now, if you shoot this one here, the leader, the rest of them will see him drop and fly off, see? So, you draw down on the last turkey here. And then the next one, see? Kind of coming from back to front. Then the rest of them won't know they're being hit. And if, of course, they might flare off some when the shooting starts, but if a feller's got himself a repeating rifle, he's got a good chance of getting the whole flock.
Sounds all right.
Turkeys sure is dumb animals.
Seems you picked up a good bit down in the hills, Alvin.
Well, anybody that done any hunting knows that.
Alvin C. York, report to Major Buxton immediately.
Yes, sir.
What have you been up to now?
I don't know.
I've been aiming not to make no trouble.
Now, Alden enters an office wearing a campaign hat and tunic. He salutes.
Private York reporting, sir.
Yes, York. At ease. York, Captain Danforth has just handed me a report concerning you, made by your company sergeant.
Yes, sir.
You have a very excellent camp record.
Well, mighty glad to hear that, sir.
You applied for exemption, I believe, as a conscientious objector.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think we can disregard that. York Sergeant Parsons recommends your promotion to the rank of corporal with special detail as instructor in target practice. Captain Danforth and I heartily approve.
I congratulate you, York.
Well, I'm much obliged to you, Major Buxton and Captain Danforth. Well, I learned them fellas to shoot the best I can, like I already done, Pusher and Bert. I mean, Privates Ross and Thomas, sir. But, well, I don't want to be no corporal.
What's that?
I said I don't want to be no corporal.
Why not?
You wait a minute, Captain. Let him talk.
Well, you see, I...
Is it because of your religious convictions, York?
Yes, sir. That's it. You see, I believe in the Bible. And I'm believing that this here life we're living is something the Lord done give us. And we got to be living it the best we can. And I'm figuring that killing other folks ain't no part of what he was intending for us to be a-doing here.
Well, yes, in a way, I agree with you.
York, with your permission, Major.
Certainly, Captain. Sit down, York.
You say you believe in the Bible.
Yes, sir.
Well, I do, too. But do you believe that the Bible means that a man shouldn't fight for what he believes to be right?
Well, it done said, blessed are the peacemakers.
Yes, I know, but you remember that verse, I think it's in Luke, where he says, he that hath no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one?
He said that to Peter. But he done stopped Peter from using the sword. He said, them that lives by the sword will be a-perishing by the sword. That, further on.
Yes, I remember.
Major Buxton stands.
Go ahead, Captain. Go ahead.
But according to St. John, he said, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servant fight.
Well, that's just the point, Captain. He done said his kingdom were not of this world. And that are different.
Yes, but,
Just a moment, Captain.
The Major shows Alvin a book.
Have you ever read this?
History of the United States.
Alvin takes it and leafs through the pages.
Yeah, sure had a lot of writing.
He stops at a page and shows it to the Major.
Daniel Boone.
Yeah. You know about him?
Well, everybody down there knows about Daniel Boone. The first man into the Valley of the Three Forks.
Yeah, he was quite a man. One of the greatest. And that book's full of great men. York, what do you suppose that Boone was looking for when he went out alone into the wilderness?
Well, I never thought much on it.
Was he looking for new lands?
Might be.
Maybe. Maybe for something more. Something that a man just can't see with his eyes or hold in his hands. Something that some men don't even know they have until they've lost it.
Yes, sir.
To be free. Well, that's quite a word, freedom. I think that's what he wanted. I think that's what sent Boone into your Tennessee country.
Is that what this here book's about?
Yep. That's the story of a whole people's struggle for freedom. From the very beginning until now. For we're still struggling. It's quite a story, York. How they all got together and set up a government. Whereby all men were pledged to defend the rights of each man, and each man to defend the rights of all men. We call it a government of the people, by the people, and for the people.
Well, I never knowed it was all written down.
You're a religious man, York.
Yes, sir.
You want to worship God in your own way.
Yes, sir.
You're a farmer.
Yes, sir.
You want to plow your fields as you see fit and raise your family according to your own lights. And that's your heritage. and mine, every American's. But the cost of that heritage is high. Sometimes it takes all we have to preserve it, even our lives. How are you going to answer that, York?
Well, you done give me a powerful lot to be a-thinking about.
Well, take your time.
Well, if I could only get home, back in them there hills, I could...
What would you do?
Well, I could figure something out. I done a heap of thinking up beyond the dark once.
All right, take 10 days furlough.
You mean I can go home?
And when you get back, if you still can't see it our way, I'll recommend your exemption.
You will?
Report to me as soon as you get back.
I'll arrange your furlough, York, starting tomorrow.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Sure would like to read this here book.
Go ahead, take it with you if you want to. You can borrow it.
Thank you, Major Book. Thank you, Captain Denton.
Alvin gives them a hurried salute and heads out the door. Now, in Tennessee, Alvin stands before the tree that Daniel Boone carved. Still wearing his uniform, he looks down at the history book and Bible in his hand, then at his hound dog.
Come on, boy.
The dog follows as Alvin heads off. Later, they step along a rocky ledge and stop on a small cliff. Alvin looks out at the valley below. A few houses and leafy trees dot the flat farmland. In the distance, a forest covers rolling hills which sit against the sky. Alvin takes off his wide-brimmed army hat and looks at the books in his hands. Leaning his back against a rock wall, Alvin takes a seat overlooking the valley. As he glances out at the view, he opens his worn Bible. He licks his thumb and leafs through the pages, scanning the contents. Now in the York cabin, Mrs. York lights a gas lamp which hangs over a table. Rosie approaches with a stack of plates and cups.
Want me to be a set in 4 places more or just 3?
Can't say, child.
Why, ain't Alvin ever gonna eat again?
The book says men don't live by bread alone.
Well, what about that there hound dog he's got with him? He can't read the book.
Get the table set.
As Mrs. York grabs a handful of silverware, George enters with his rifle.
He's up at the pint. Been up there all day.
Want George to go get him, Ma?
Let him be.
Meanwhile, on the cliff, Alvin and his dog sit silhouetted by the dim sunlight which peeks through the cloudy sky. Alvin's Bible lies open at his side. Later, Alvin sits with his head in his hand.
Put your trust in the book, Alvin.
But here's another book, York. The history of the United States.
Men that live by the sword will be a perishing by the sword.
The government, all men, to defend the rights of each man. Each man to defend the rights of all men.
Remember the Lord done said, thou shalt not kill.
But the cost of that heritage is high. Sometimes all we have to preserve it, even our lives.
Obey your God.
Defend your country.
Your God.
Your country.
Your God.
Country.
God.
Country.
God.
Country.
God.
Country.
God.
A breeze flips the pages of Alvin's open Bible. As it stops, Alvin picks up the book and reads from one of the pages.
Render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. Unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's. Not to God. God.
As Alvin sits up, his eyes widen and a break of sunlight brightens his face. He slowly rises to his feet, clutching the Bible. Now, in Major Buxton's office, the Major and Captain Danforth talk with another officer.
Private York reporting, sir.
Have him come in.
Yes, sir.
All right, Sergeant.
As the sergeant leaves, Alvin enters and salutes.
I'm bringing your book back, Major, and I'm thanking you.
Oh, you're welcome, York.
I done what you told me. I thought things over.
Well?
I'd like to stay in this yar army.
I rather hope that you would, York.
But there's just one thing, sir, that I ought to tell you. There's lots of things There's lots of things I ain't figured out yet. Lots of things still are going on in my mind. But it's, well, it's just like Pastor Pyle done told me. I reckon I can just be a trusting in something that's a heap bigger than I be.
York, as your superior officer, I don't feel called upon to look into your conscience. It's enough for me that I trust you. And I believe that when the time comes, you'll conduct yourself as a soldier should.
Thank you, sir.
And I'm going to approve your promotion to the rank of corporal.
Well, I'll sure take care of my men the best I can, sir.
I know you will, York. That's all.
Thank you, Major.
As Alvin leaves, Captain Danforth turns to Major Buxton.
Aren't you taking quite a chance, Major?
You mean as to whether he'll fight or not?
Danforth nods.
No, I don't think so, Captain. I don't think I'm taking any chances at all.
Words appear. Soldiers now fully trained and equipped for battle. The All-American Division sails for France. Now, Pastor Pyle reads a letter to Gracie and the Yorks.
Am feeling just fine and have taken in all the sights. And Bert took me to a church called Notre Dame Cathedral. It's big enough inside for a fella to plant a crop of corn. Pusher just come in, saying our outfit is moving up to front pretty soon. I reckon that's so, 'cause we got all our training and they ain't brought us here for no sightseeing tour. Nohow. Gracie wrote in her letter she was a worrying. Tell her don't.
He looks to Gracie.
I was feared. I'm afeard for Alvin.
Tain't right for us to be afeard, Gracie. Alvin's in good hands. The Lord takes care of them that's a-believing in him.
Now, on a battlefield, barbed wire obstacles and sandbags line the top of a trench. On the horizon, bright flashes light up the sky. In the trench, Bert leans against a wall of sandbags. Beside him, a large-nosed soldier peers over the wall. Alvin stands with him, his face smudged with dirt. Wearing a steel helmet, Alvin glances around nervously. He looks down to Pusher, who sits beside him. The large-nosed soldier turns to the others.
Any of you blokes got a cigarette?
Yeah. Here you are.
Thanks. You know, you Yanks just got here in the nick of time. We're running shy of these. Besides, we could do with some help. Look out.
They all duck. Dirt billows from the ground beside the trench and rains down on the soldiers.
It takes a while, but you'll learn when to flop and when not to. They say you never hear the one that's hit you. Yeah, it's only half the truth.
Nah, the whole truth is, if you hears it, you've got a chance. Duck.
More dirt showers the group.
See what I mean?
Right, he's got the range good.
Yeah, a guy can get killed around here.
Look out!
Don't be afraid. This one will pass over.
See? Bert nods and nervously adjusts his helmet.
Takes time, it do. But you'll get the hang of it. Duck again.
As smoke fills the air above the trench, more dirt pelts the soldiers.
If that was shrapnel, now, we wouldn't be flopping at all. You know, you only flop for,
A cigarette falls from his lips.
Okay, Bite, the express has gone through.
Hey, Bite!
Bert's body slides off a wood plank and lands on the ground, face up. One of the British soldiers kneels at Bert's side and lifts off the man's helmet. He points out a dent to the others. Pusher and Alvin look at each other solemnly.
One's got your name on it. There's nothing you can do.
Alvin stares mournfully toward his dead friend. Now, words appear over a battle. The second week of the Meuse-Argonne Offensive, October 8, 1918. Officers gather around a map.
You see, gentlemen, the grave responsibility rests upon us. This entire German salient holding up the Argonne advance depends for ammunition and supplies on the De Colville Railroad, which, as you know, lies just beyond these hills. It must be taken. This is all open country ahead, but you can expect heavy machine gun fire from these wooded ridges on the right and the left flanks. But we've got to get through. Synchronize your watches.
Use as a mark 4 hours, 32 minutes. It is now minus 10, 8, 6, 4, 2, mark.
Any questions?
What about artillery support, Captain Tillman?
Artillery will lay down a rolling barrage at 6 hours. 0 hour will be 6 hours, 10 minutes.
Now, a watch reads 3 minutes past six. In a trench, a soldier checks his watch.
I'd like to know where that barrage is that we're supposed to have. Runners, notify the platoon commanders that we go over, barrage or no barrage. First platoon at 6:10. Second and third platoons to follow in waves of 100 meters.
Yes, sir.
As the soldiers move out, the officer walks through the trench and rounds a corner where other soldiers wait. Among them, Pusher stands beside Alvin, who glances over his shoulder. He watches as a soldier approaches Sergeant Early.
6:10.
6:10. All right.
The sergeant checks his watch, then peers left and right. His gaze meets Alvin's, and he looks the young soldier up and down. As they look away from each other, Alvin's lips lift in a thoughtful smile. Now, the watch reads 6:10. With his eyes glued to the time, the officer motions the troops forward. Dozens of soldiers climb out of the trenches with bayoneted rifles. Moving stealthily, they make their way around barbed wire obstacles and bare trees. In a nearby machine gun nest, a German gunner spots the advancing troops. As two others ready their machine guns, the German soldier yells to a mustached officer.
Alarm!
Four rifles lean against each other like a teepee. Several Germans grab the rifles and join dozens more in a trench lined with sandbags.
Fire!
The riflemen and machine gunners fire at the American soldiers on the field below. One soldier falls back, limp. The Germans mow down more soldiers, smoke billowing from the machine guns. Alvin grits his teeth as he weaves past the battlefield's low, leafless trees. One gunshot fires from the heights, and an American's helmet falls off. The man drops to the ground. The remaining men crossing the field shoot their rifles from the uneven terrain. As bombs land among the soldiers, dark clouds of dirt and smoke billow up from the ground. As Alvin and Pusher scramble along, Alvin drops briefly on all fours. Elsewhere, a bomb explodes in a water-filled crater, spraying water 40 feet into the air. Gripping his rifle, Alvin deftly picks his way past the barren trees. Under the barrage of machine gun fire and explosions, Sergeant Early keeps low as he hurries past the trees. In the machine gun nest, two soldiers feed ammo belts into their partners' guns. As explosions send billows of smoke into the air, Alvin hustles past men shooting back at the Germans. Two bombs hit the ground, knocking nearby soldiers off their feet. One American soldier is hit, spins around, then collapses. As the machine gunners mow them down, several American soldiers fall into a large pit. Meanwhile, Alvin continues on through the trees. Men fall all around one officer, who raises his arm.
Take cover!
A few soldiers dive behind a fallen tree, while others take cover in a shallow pit. Alvin, along with several others, crouches down near an idle cannon. Beside him, Sergeant Parsons turns to Early.
We'll never get through.
You gotta wipe out those nests.
Early! Take what's left of your section and work your way back around that hill. Maybe you can jump from behind.
All right. Savage, you are cutting. Bring your men. Come with me.
Alvin and two other soldiers follow Sergeant Early across the battlefield. A dozen more men join them. At a German gun emplacement, one soldier takes a hit and keels over. Meanwhile, the line of soldiers led by Sergeant Early makes its way toward a trench. As they approach, he motions for them to keep low. Slowly, Sergeant Early crawls to the edge of the empty trench and peers over a pile of sandbags. He motions to the others to climb in. Elsewhere in the trench, German soldiers march forward.
Take cover.
The American soldiers crouch down.
Listen.
The Germans round a corner, and Early and his troops attack. As the soldiers struggle, several Germans run away. Two Americans throw grenades at them. One lands in front of the fleeing Germans, the other behind. Amid the struggle, one American soldier wrestles a German to the ground and strikes him repeatedly. Later, Early stops in his tracks. Nearby, the line of riflemen fire on the American troops.
We're not far enough back.
Savage, keep the men quiet. Cutting, come up here with that banner.
The soldiers follow close behind Early. They head along the narrow trench, which is lined on either side with wooden boards. The soldiers kick up dirt as they hustle through the snaking channel. As they reach the bottom of a hill, Early stops and motions for his men to stay low. Gripping a pistol, Early peers over the trench and spots the German rifle line.
We're right behind their lines. We'll skirt this ridge and flank them.
Pusher spots two Germans.
Look, armies! Come on, get up!
The Germans drop their gear and race down the other side of the hill. The American soldiers follow after them. As the Germans reach their base camp, their superior officer approaches. The Germans look up to the hill as dozens of American soldiers crest the ridge. The Americans fire down on the Germans, who raise their arms in surrender.
Hold your fire! Follow on down and keep them covered! Spread out, man! Spread out! Line them up and just...
Alvin and the other soldiers head to the German camp. Alvin takes a pistol from a German officer and holds it to the man's stomach. Meanwhile, in the machine gun nest, a soldier feeding ammo spots the capture. He taps the gunner. They turn the machine gun around and aim it toward the captors. The mustached officer notices them, and they motion for him to get down. The Germans duck, and the gunner fires on the Americans. Two soldiers fall off a ridge and crash through a hut's thatched roof. As gunfire rakes the ground before him, Alvin takes cover beside a German officer. Nearby, an American soldier gets hit and falls. As blood oozes from his mouth, Early and another soldier grimace.
That bad, Cutting.
Me too.
Savage.
Savage.
Poor Savage.
I seen him go down. They like to cut him in two.
The only non-com left.
Alvin's eyes shift to the gunner's nest.
York. Take over.
Did you hear what I said?
I heard you.
He starts to leave.
Watch this, fella.
The rest of you keep under cover.
Alvin dives for a fallen soldier's rifle.
Come back here. Where are you going?
You didn't give me command.
Alvin crawls away on his stomach. As the machine gunners fire at him, a fellow soldier picks one off with his rifle. Alvin hurries along the ground behind a row of German soldiers. Machine gun fire strikes a puddle inches beside him. As he reaches a low stone wall, another American shoots a second machine gunner. Now, Alvin makes a run for it and stops behind another stone wall. Beside him, an American soldier briefly covers his face, then falls motionless. Alvin looks to him with a creased brow, then dashes behind a nearby tree. Bullet holes mar its trunk. Alvin ducks down behind a log and takes aim at the machine gun nest. The two remaining Germans drop. Pusher watches Alvin race uphill.
Hey, Alvin!
Alvin reaches the top of the ridge and sneaks up behind another nest. As he shoots the gunner and ammo feeder, Pusher watches from beside the mustached German.
Well, he cleaned out that machine gun nest.
Alvin crouches down inside the nest and spots two more machine gunners from behind. As they fire on the Americans, a rifleman shoots at them but misses. Alvin removes the bayonet from his rifle as he watches the gunner's helmets bob up and down behind a wall of sandbags. Alvin shoots twice and misses. His eyes squinted purposefully, Alvin wets his sights and aims again. The Germans peek up and he shoots them both.
Zucchini, Donahue, the rest of you guys, keep your eye on their harness so they don't try any rough stuff.
Don't try anything funny.
Belly to the ground, you babies.
We better get up there.
No, we better keep an eye on these prisons.
As Alvin hustles away from the gun nests, a half dozen Germans appear before him at the top of a hill. Using his pistol, Alvin picks off all of them. Pusher and the mustached officer watch.
Five will get you 10. That guy knocks off your whole sauerkraut army.
There are 25 machine guns on that bridge. Tell him it's useless.
What did you say?
I said tell him it's useless.
Well, you tell him. You talk better English than I do.
Meanwhile, Alvin reaches another machine gun nest and finds a dead soldier. He throws down his empty pistol and takes a loaded one from the body. Alvin pulls the body out of the way and gets in position, overlooking the trench of German riflemen. Working from the end of the line forward, he picks off several soldiers.
Just like a flock of turkeys.
Alvin shoots another German, then loads a cartridge into his rifle. A few soldiers at the end of the line notice him, but Alvin shoots them before they can aim. Several more are hit, and a soldier motions for the troop to get down.
Deckung nehmen! Volle Deckung nehmen!
They crouch down against the trench wall. As one pops up to shoot, Alvin fires first. The Germans wave a white flag in the air.
All right, come on out of there! All of you! Come this way!
The soldiers file toward Alvin with their hands up. Alvin keeps his rifle aimed at them.
Hey, tell the rest of them fellas to quit shooting and come on out of there!
Them hands up and start going down the hill there.
Dozens of the Germans raise their hands and climb out of the trench.
Keep it coming. Go on, move out of there, down the hill.
Alvin steps toward them as they head down the hill.
All right, keep it coming.
Alvin's fellow soldiers watch.
Get down there. Don't do no shooting. All right, get on down.
At the top of the ridge, Alvin's lone figure holds the many Germans at gunpoint.
Boy, I told you.
Pusher smiles at the mustached German officer, then watches Alvin's prisoners descend the hill.
Look at that mob.
Hey, we can't handle all that, gang.
Sure we can. That's my meat. Come on, step lively. Move forward.
Pusher and the others get the remaining Germans to their feet and direct them to join the captives at the bottom of the hill.
Move forward, then. Come on, step up. Step lively.
The Americans frisk the prisoners, who line up in a tight grid. Alvin herds the rest of his captives toward the others.
Come on.
Come on, get
going.
Nice
one,
you
are.
Come on here.
Come on, get in there. Come on. Get those hands up. Come on, move fast. Move.
Hiya, Pusher.
That was a good job, pal.
Where's the sergeant?
Over there, hurt pretty bad.
How many men we got left?
Eight beside you.
Among the Germans, one soldier takes out a grenade.
Watch them, fellas.
Get in there, you guys. Move forward. Move.
Grenade explodes right behind Pusher, who slowly buckles, dropping to his hands and knees.
Pusher! Pusher!
This is where we change cars, Alvin. The end of the line.
Pusher falls limp. Alvin looks from his friend to the group of Germans. With his pistol drawn, he approaches the prisoners.
Who done that? Who threw that grenade?
The German soldier tries to make a run for it, and Alvin and another American shoot.
Come on, you, put your hands up.
Alvin marches toward the mustached officer.
You know what I'm saying? You understand?
Yeah.
Tell them men of yourn if any more of that happens, you and a lot more of them's going to be mighty sorry. Go ahead.
Ordnung! Keine Widerstand!
Tell them to drop their belts.
Abschneiden!
The officer and the rest of the German prisoners take off their equipment belts and drop them at their feet.
Look them fellas over good.
Alvin pulls a prisoner out of line and frisks him.
You ready back there?
Okay, here.
Okay, ready here. Watch it.
Stern-faced, Alvin turns back to the mustached officer.
Now get going.
Abteilung, marsch!
Guarded by the handful of Americans, the prisoners march off in two lines. As they head out, they step over their discarded belts. Later, the group heads through a wooded area.
Tell them to halt.
Abteilung, halt!
If you wanted to get back to the American lines, which way would you be going?
He points to the right.
Up there?
We'll go this way. Go on.
Alvin leads the group in the opposite direction. Later, the Americans and their long line of prisoners head through a trench. As they reach a corner, Alvin ducks down.
Hey, tell them to halt.
Abteilung, halt!
What's up?
Sounds like them Heinies is making a heap of trouble.
Nearby, a gun emplacement holds two dozen Germans.
What are we gonna do about it?
Get them.
We got enough to take care of already.
And a few more won't make no difference. Hey, you. Signal up there and tell them they're surrounded. Tell them to drop their guns and come down with their hands up.
The mustached officer looks toward his armed comrades.
Hey, his gun catches off kinda easy.
The officer eyes the gun.
Manist, see now game.
A soldier in the rifle line looks over his shoulder at the prisoners. The mustached officer waves to him.
Kampf aufgeben! Wir können noch rauskommen!
Feuer einstellen, Waffen niederlegen, Hände hoch, Stellung verlassen.
The soldiers stop shooting and remove their belts. With their hands in the air, they head toward the Americans and prisoners. The mustached officer glares at Alvin as the newly captured soldiers crest a hill marching toward them. A satisfied smile crosses Alvin's lips.
Is your air trained good, Major?
Later, at an American post.
Hey, Sarge. Look. Looks like Heine's.
Alvin's troop and their prisoners head toward them.
Hello there!
A gang. Maybe some kind of a trick.
Something funny here.
Let him get a little closer.
Hello there!
Who are you?
Detail of the 328th. We got some prisoners.
Halt where you are.
Halt!
That's Yank, all right.
Come on, let's have a look at you.
Watch him, fellas!
Alvin's six men climb out of the trench and position themselves around the Germans.
Keep them covered.
Alvin approaches the sergeant.
Where are you going?
Can you tell me where the 328th be?
It's up that way someplace. Where'd you pick up all this bunch?
We'll back up the line a ways. You couldn't be taking them off our hands, could you?
What would we do with
them? Well, I don't rightly know. Can we be going?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you. Come on. Fire!
Let's mash.
The Germans march out of the trench, led by the mustached officer. Alvin and the others walk alongside them. Later, the group enters a village square. They march past quaint timber-framed buildings and an American soldier on a motorcycle.
All right. Halt! Prisoners,
hold back there!
Be watching them, Joe.
Alvin steps up to an officer who makes notes on a piece of paper. Nearby, dozens of German prisoners stand behind a fence.
Beg your pardon, sir.
Yeah?
We all got some prisoners. Can we be leaving them here?
Mm-hmm. Put them right over there.
The officer sees Alvin's prisoners.
Wait a minute. How many have you got?
Well, I done counted 132 heads, sir.
We haven't room for that many here. Take them back up the line.
Yes, sir, but...
But what?
Well, sir, we can't find our outfit, and we tried to drop them off two other places, and there ain't but only eight of us to handle them.
You should have brought more men.
But that's all the war of us, sir.
You mean to say that you and seven others captured all that bunch?
Yes, sir, and we'd kind of like to get rid of them.
Well, good Lord. I guess we can give you some help. Come on, Sergeant.
Thanks.
Now, American troops march wearily through wet mud. A soldier on a motorcycle approaches the men up front.
Hey, Sarge! York by himself captured 132 Germans.
Word travels back through the ranks.
32 Heinies all by his lonesome.
How'd he do it?
Must have surrounded him. Guy named York.
That's what they say.
Gee, he captured hundreds of Boche machine guns.
Guy named York. All by his lonesome.
Hey, what's that?
How many?
A whole division and a lot of high officers.
I'm telling you.
York was dead.
Yeah, but half the German army and the generals.
I don't know.
One guy.
How could one guy?
Guy named York.
What's that?
They say he captured Hindenburg and the Crown Prince brought them all back.
A young soldier straggling behind the troop turns to pass on the news, but no one's there. Later, an officer soaks his feet.
Say, Sarge, did you hear? York captured the Kaiser.
The sergeant gapes, now on the Argonne battlefield.
Now, as I understand it, York, your detail came over that ridge there and captured about 30 men right down in here.
Yes, sir.
And then you were forced to cover by a machine gun that was right up on this other ridge.
Yes, sir, right up there.
Where were you?
Well, I was laying behind that log there. There was a machine gun, and it's pretty heavy. So I worked my way across up behind that log there under the hill.
Rather incredible, wasn't it, York? They'll be able to cross so much open ground without being hit.
Well, I reckon the good Lord was protecting me, sir.
What'd you want to go over there for?
Well, I figured that was a good place to be because they had to rear up and show themselves in order to shoot at me and the rest of the boys back here. And whenever they did, I could touch them off.
I see.
So I went up the hill, up around that way, then worked my way down the ridge to a place where they was flanked and couldn't show themselves without being hit. So they finally give up.
How many did you kill?
I don't rightly know, sir.
I think Captain Danforth is familiar with that, sir.
We counted about 20 bodies all together up around there.
What were your men doing all this time, Corporal?
Well, I couldn't just answer that, sir. I was pretty busy, and I reckon they was, too.
According to the statements of the others, they were guarding the prisoners and couldn't expose themselves to the fire from the ridge.
All right, gentlemen. That's all, Corporal.
Alvin salutes the Major General and leaves with Captain Danforth and Major Buxton.
Corporal. There's something that I'd like to know.
Yes, sir?
That night that you reported back to me at Camp Gordon, you as much as told me that you were quite prepared to die for your country, but not to kill. What made you decide to change your mind?
Well, sir...
Of course, if you'd rather not tell me, why, it's quite all right.
Well, I'm as much against killing as ever, sir. But it was this way, Colonel. When I started out, I felt just like you said. But when I hear them machine guns are going and all them fellas are dropping around me, I figured that them guns was killing hundreds, maybe thousands. And there weren't nothing anybody could do but to stop them guns. And that's what I done.
You mean to tell me that you did it to save lives?
Yes, sir. That was why.
Well, York, what you've just told me is the most extraordinary thing of all.
Later, hundreds of Allied soldiers form a square in a courtyard.
There's all York!
Alvin marches forward from the rest of the soldiers, does a left flank, and stops before a French marshal.
Sergent York, votre acte de bravoure peut être considéré comme un des plus beaux accomplis par un soldat des armées alliées. Moi, Maréchal Foch, je vous décerne la médaille militaire.
The marshal pins a round medal next to the Croix de Guerre medal already affixed to Alvin's uniform. As the French officer kisses Alvin's cheeks, Alvin's eyes shift uncomfortably.
Thank you, sir.
Later, with an American officer.
And for conspicuous gallantry beyond the call of duty, you have been awarded the Distinguished Service Cross.
The officer pins the medal to Alvin's uniform. On it, an eagle with outstretched wings is centered on a cross.
Sergeant York, I am proud that you are of the All-American Division. It's a privilege to command such men as you.
The officer and Alvin salute. Later, Alvin stands before a general.
Sergeant York, as Commander-in-Chief of the American Expeditionary Forces, it is my pleasure to confer upon you the United States Congressional Medal of Honor for heroism beyond the call of duty.
Alvin wears the star-shaped medal around his neck.
Thank you, sir.
Now, over a map of North America, newspaper headlines zoom into view. York acclaimed hero, and American hero decorated. Two headlines in Spanish newspapers read, York aclamado hero, and York es declarado hero. Now on a ship, hundreds of soldiers crowd the decks. Later, at a pier, civilians wait as Alvin disembarks. Two men in top hats greet Alvin at the bottom of the boarding ramp.
I'm Cordell Hull, Sergeant York, representative from your district in Tennessee.
I'm mighty glad to meet you, Mr. Hull.
This is Mr. Harrison from the Tennessee Society.
Tennessee is indeed proud, Sergeant.
Thank you. This way, Sergeant.
They lead him to a convertible and drive off through the cheering crowd. Later, in a ticker tape parade, Alvin and Mr. Hull ride in the convertible, showered with confetti.
Well, Sergeant, what do you think of it?
Appears like everybody's having a mighty good time.
Later.
So, Sergeant, in the name of the people of New York, may I present you with this key to our city as a token of our very great esteem. And may God bless you.
The mayor hands Alvin a giant key.
Thank you for what you said, and I'm sure grateful to you for this here key. Well, thank you. And thank you all. Now, Sergeant, the people of New York would like to show their appreciation. Is there anything we can do for you? Well, there's just one thing I'd like to ask you. And that is? Well, if it's all the same to everybody, I sure would like to ride on the subway on the Bronx Express.
I think we can arrange that.
Now, a sign reads, the Waldorf Astoria. Inside, a butler takes Mr. Hull, Mr. Harrison, and Alvin into a lavish hotel suite. Alvin looks around.
I hope you will be comfortable here, Sergeant York.
Well, if I ain't, that'd be pretty hard to please.
If there's anything you require, all you will have to do is ask for it.
Thank you. Thanks. Awful lot of room for just one fella here.
Alvin strolls around the room, swinging the key to the city back and forth in his hand. He spots a framed photograph of his mother on a nearby piano. He picks it up and looks at the two gentlemen with wide eyes. Gazing at the picture, Alvin smiles.
This here's mighty thoughtful of you, gentlemen. I reckon you know I ain't seen my ma for quite a spell.
So we understand that.
Mr. Hull answers a candlestick telephone.
Representative Hull. Oh, yes, yes. Are they ready? Put them on. Somebody for you, Sergeant.
Me?
Alvin takes the phone from the congressman.
Thank you.
He hesitantly lifts the receiver to his ear.
Hello? Hello there. What? Who is it? I can't hear you.
It's Mrs. York.
Who is it?
What's that you're saying? I can't hear you.
Put it up to your ear, Mother York.
Stand closer, Ma. When are you coming home, Alvin? I said, when are you coming home? Oh, I'm glad, son. I'll tell her. She's right here. She wants to talk to you, Gracie.
It's me, Alvin. It's me, Gracie. We're all here in Pastor Pyle's store. He's got this here phone in here now. Oh, I just can't wait to see you again, Alvin. I can't wait to see you.
Yeah, I'll be coming home, Gracie, right away. Yeah. Goodbye, Gracie.
Goodbye, Alvin. Bye.
Gracie hands the receiver to Pastor Pyle, who hangs it up. The York family stares at the phone. Now, back with Alvin.
It was nice to talk to the folks. I'm thanking you.
You're welcome, Sergeant.
Now, over the image of a large banquet hall, newspaper headlines roll into view. Tennessee Society honors hero. Stock Exchange suspends activities to cheer war hero Alvin C. York. Congress rises to cheer hero of the Argonne. Later, Mr. Hull and Alvin enter the dark hotel room. Alvin flips a switch and a crystal chandelier and wall sconce light up. Alvin flips the switch on and off a few times and smiles.
It's like the electric signs down the street.
Mr. Hull smiles.
How do you like New York, Alvin, as much as you've seen of it?
Mr. Hull?
Yes, Alvin.
I want to be going home. When do you think I can go?
You're pretty anxious, I reckon.
Yes, sir, I am. I've got to get to work.
Well, as far as that goes, there's plenty to do right here, Alvin.
What do you mean?
I've been wanting to talk to you about this. You're a pretty famous man now. And judging by all these offers you've been getting, it seems a lot of people realize it. For instance, two companies want you in motion pictures. Ziegfeld wants you in an act in his New Follies. And here's an offer to appear at the Winter Garden. That's a theater. And here's a breakfast food manufacturer who wants you to endorse his product.
What does that mean?
Well, you're to tell him how much you like it, how much good it's done you.
Oh, I ain't ever had any of that there breakfast food.
Doesn't seem to make any difference. Anyway, I've totaled the offers so far, and they amount to around $250,000.
They're offering me all that money?
It's just a plain business proposition.
Well, I sure could do a powerful sight with that money. It was a piece of bottom land I was trying to get.
Here's your chance to get it.
Are they offering that money because of what happened over there?
Well,
That's it, ain't it?
That's it.
What would you do, Mr. Hull?
Well, I think that's up to you, Albert.
I reckon it is.
Take all the time you want to think it over.
I've done thought it over, Mr. Hull. I ain't proud of what happened over there. What we done in France was something we had to do. Some fellas done it, ain't a coming back. So the way I figure, things like that ain't for buying and selling. So I reckon I'll have to refuse them. Will you be telling them that for me, please? And tell them I'm a-going home?
Mr. Hull rests a hand on Alvin's shoulder.
I'll be more than glad to, Alvin.
Thank you, Mr. Hull.
Now, at a train station, a sign reads Crossville, Tennessee. American flags hang from the station above a crowd of townspeople, photographers, and band members. Zeke, Gracie, and Pastor Pyle stand by the Yorks on the platform. As a train pulls to a stop, Alvin appears on the steps of a passenger coach. Dozens of people crowd around Alvin as he steps off the train. He searches the sea of faces and spots Gracie pushing her way toward him. As she fights through the crowd, her hat falls off. She reaches Alvin and wraps her arms around him in a tight embrace. Grinning broadly, Alvin looks from Gracie's smiling face to the townspeople around him. Rosie and George approach, and Alvin puts his arms around their shoulders. Alvin spots his mother in the crowd. She watches him wide-eyed as he steps closer. Wearing his uniform and garrison cap, Alvin looks down at his mother with a childlike smile. Later, Pastor Pyle drives the family in a car.
Hey, Alvin, how about your medals?
What about them, George?
I thought you'd be wearing them.
You'll be seeing them.
Gotta be a soft and big.
As I was saying, Alvin, of course, I always figured on marrying you and Gracie myself, but I ain't one to take the job away from the governor of the state. Well, you're the dang swangest hero raised in these pots since Daniel Boone and Andy Jackson.
Sure are, Alvin. Whee!
Hang on, Rosie.
Hey, what about that there piece of land I was aiming to get in Tompkins Holler? Still there, I reckon.
Yep, still there.
Somebody else has got it by now, I suppose. Well, I couldn't rightly expect Zeb to hold it for me all this time. I sure would like to see that there piece of land, though.
I reckon ain't no harm you seeing it, Alvin.
I'd like to be seeing it, too.
I'll let you off at the fork, and you and Gracie can walk over to the holler.
Later, Alvin and Gracie approach the new bridge that traverses the stream.
Hey, look here. Somebody done fixed up this old bridge.
Yeah, they have.
Gracie smiles to herself.
Gracie, I got to talk to you. It weren't just the land I was wanting to see. There's something we got to talk about. Miss Gracie, I'm plumb worried.
What about Alvin?
Well, what with the governor affixing to marry us and all them people coming here from all over...
Sure takes a body's breath away, but I reckon we'll get through it all right.
Well, it ain't just that I'm worried about.
Well, what then?
Well, sure looks like I ain't got nothing to offer you except in a big wedding.
Well, some girls don't even get that.
Well, I reckon you'd like a place to sleep, wouldn't you?
Oh, I don't know. I done a heap of sleeping while you was away.
You sure ain't expecting too much of a husband.
I'm expecting my husband to love me. I reckon the good Lord will take care of the rest.
It looks like he's done a heap already. Just to having you. Well, I was expecting to take over from here myself.
I reckon you get to do your share.
No, Gracie. It can't be that away. We got to wait, maybe in another 2 or 3 years, if you're willing to wait.
Oh, but I hate, that's the point.
You mean you won't wait?
There ain't no need of waiting. Now, Alvin, you keep a looking down, and don't you be looking up till I tell you. Come on.
Gracie takes Alvin's hand and leads him up the short hill. A house and a barn sit on the once vacant land.
There. Now you can look. What do you see, Alvin? Tell me. It's yours, Alvin. It's all yours. They give it to you, the people of the state of Tennessee, for what you've done.
You mean?
Oh, it's 200 acres, and the house is bigger with more windows, and the kitchen's got a pump.
Alvin's mouth lifts in a brief grin, and his eyes widen in disbelief.
The Lord sure does move in mysterious ways.
Come on.
Hand in hand, Alvin and Gracie step through a wooden gate toward their new home. In the yard, Alvin points at 2 harnessed horses. He and his fiancée race toward the porch of the 2-story house, its 2 dormers gleaming in the sun. Now, over a painting of a homestead and rolling hills, words appear. The End, a Warner Brothers First National picture. The players, Gary Cooper as Alvin C. York, Walter Brennan as Pastor Rozier Pyle, Joan Leslie as Gracie Williams, George Tobias as Pusher Ross, Stanley Ridges as Major Buxton, Margaret Weicherly as Mother York, Ward Bond as Ike Botkin, Noah Beery Jr. as Buck Lipscomb, June Lockhart as Rosie York, Dickie Moore as George York, Clem Bevins as Zeke, Howard DeSilva as Lem, Charles Trowbridge as Cordell Hull, Harvey Stevens as Captain Danforth, and others.